Can we get tickets or remain standing? Those who do not have chairs, we are going to arrange for you to be, if you are not going to do any presentation, we will arrange for those who are not presenting now to be in the waiting room. Because we don't have, we have a shortage of chairs here. The secretaries will sort that out, but these chairs are around this fine. Honorable members, you might have realized that there is a slight change on our program. You remember that this is the shortest term for us. The sooner we do our work, the better. So we decided that we will deal with these items today at the same time. AMSCO, Castle Control Board, and the AG. Now, we are going to allow the AG to start first. Then we will have AMSCO. Then after that, it will be Castle Control Board. The AG will present for maximum 30 minutes. And then we can then go to the other institutions. AG, where are you? Are you ready?
Yeah. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, officials of the various entities, as well as my colleagues. My name is Kanija Maraj. I'm the Corporate Executive from the Auditor General, responsible for the Department of Defense and in the portfolio itself. Today we're going to have Mali, who's going to go through the presentation. I just want to you to acknowledge that it's the entire portfolio, the presentation, so it's on the whole department, including all of the entities. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I will give you a presentation on the audit outcomes of the defense portfolio. We are here today as part of our mandate, which is to enable oversight and accountability in the public sector. And we are also here to represent the audit outcome so that you can doing their work in terms of producing the budgetary review and recommendations report. Our focus of the audit, we focus on the audit of financial statements. We also audit compliance with laws and regulations, and we also audit performance information. Just to touch briefly on the audit opinions that we give, we have one that we call unqualified audit opinion without findings, which is termed the clean audit. This opinion means that the financial statements fairly presented the state of affairs, as well as that there was no issues on compliance with laws and regulations, and there were also no issues on performance information reported by the entity. The next opinion is financially unqualified opinion with findings. On this one, we are saying that the financial statements fairly present the state of affairs of the entity. However, there might have been issues that were reported on compliance with laws and regulations, as well as performance information. And then we've got qualified opinion. On the qualified opinion, what we mean is that the financial statements do not fairly present, meaning that there were some certain areas in the financial statements that we did not agree with, and that there might have been also issues on compliance, and there must have been issues of performance information. And then we also have adverse opinion. On adverse opinion, we basically mean that we do not agree with the whole set of financial statements that is presented by the entity. And then lastly, we've got disclaimer. A disclaimer meaning that we could not get information to support the figures reported in the financial statement. On the next slide, we're basically just indicating the acronyms that we'll be using in the rest of the presentation. The green represents unqualified with no findings. The yellow represents unqualified with findings. The purple represents qualified report, audit opinion with findings. Adverse is the pink one, disclaimer the red one, and if they are all outstanding, it is represented in blue. And then the movement is represented by the green showing upwards, meaning improved, unchanged is horizontal, and the reversed is red. As part of our responsibility, like I said earlier, we are enabling oversight and accountability. So this is the accountability cycle, which basically shows that in the center of everything, there must be accountability, but there are also other areas that ensure that accountability. And those other areas that ensure accountability is the planning, meaning that there must be proper planning. And then it's a due, that's the third one, meaning that there must be internal controls and supervision. And the third one is checking, meaning that there must be monitoring. And then the fifth one is act, meaning that there must be consequences if the actions are not implemented. And then we're saying that all of these will ensure that the good audit outcomes and that the service delivery to our people. I will now take you through the snapshot of the audit outcomes for the whole portfolio for the 17-18 financial year. You will see that we start with clean audits, wherein we are saying that there is a regression in terms of clean audits, because in this portfolio for the current year, there's only 20% of audits falling in that category, which is the Cartel Control Board. They were also in the same category the prior year. The only audit that is not now in that category to the last year is AMCO, which has then moved to unqualified with findings. On the next item, we report on the personal financial statements, wherein we are saying that there are three entities that submitted financial statements that had no material misstatements, and that is the Cartel Control Board, AMCO, and Foreign Minister of Veterans. Then the two entities that are not part of the 60% is Defense and the Special Defense Account. Then on the Quality of Performance Report, we are reporting on entities that reported that did not have material findings or performance information, and those three entities are the Cartel Control Board, AMCO, and the Department of Defense. So there was one entity that had material findings or performance information, and that is the Department of Military Veterans. Then the next one is findings on compliance with laws and regulations, and there was only one entity that did not have findings on compliance with laws and regulations, and that is the Cartel Control Board. So the rest of the entities, meaning Department of Defense, Special Defense Account, Department of Military Veterans, and AMCO, had compliance findings reported in their audit reports. Then the last item that we touch on is irregular expenditure. For this portfolio of defense and And this ticker shows the summary of the audit outcomes for the four financial years. So as you can see, the movements between current and prior, General Defense and Special Defense account remain on the qualification, whereas DMV remains also on unqualified with findings. AMCO moves to unqualified with findings because of the compliance of the finding, and then CPP remains on the clean audit. Then we summarize the internal controls that resulted in this audit outcome. Basically, we are saying that on the red areas, intervention is required, and we summarize them into the three categories: leadership, financial and business management, and risk governance. Here we are basically saying that on leadership, there wasn't adequate oversight exercised by accounting officers for the specific entities being DMV, DOD, and the SDA. Action plans to address recurring findings were not effectively implemented by the DOD and the DMV. And we are saying that establishment and implementation of IP governance remains a concern in the whole portfolio. Then on financial and performance management, we say that the financial statements and the business information that was submitted were not adequately reviewed, specifically for those three entities where the material misstatements identified, that is the DOD, the DMV, and the SDA. And also compliance was not adequately reviewed and monitored, which resulted in the compliance findings that were reported on the defense, DMV, the special defense account, and AMCO. Then the design and implementation of internal controls around IT systems is not adequate in the whole portfolio. And lastly, on governance, there were issues of internal audit, meaning that the internal audit was not resolved and properly functioning in the DOD, DMV, and the Special Defense Account. Then we summarize the assurance that was provided by the different role players, the first level of role players, second level, and the third level. On the first level, it's senior management, accounting officers, and the executive authority, and it's indicated with the assurance provided by each area. The second level is on the internal audit committee, wherein we are saying that for DOD, DMV, and SDA, like I said before, there are issues around internal audit because they have not provided assurance. Then on the AMCO, assurance was provided on internal audit and audit committee. We are concerned about DOD, DMV, where we are saying that the audit committee provided some assurance. Lastly, the portfolio committee, we have assessed a committee based on their oversight role, and we concluded that the committee provided assurance. We have also this year assessed the outcome based on the accountability cycle that we talked about earlier. And our indication or assessment is that on planning, the status of audit action plans was unchanged because they were not fully implemented in the portfolio. And that when it comes to usefulness of performance information, there was an improvement because there were no areas where we reported. There were no issues that we reported in this area. Then on the due, we think that internal controls remains also a concern because they were not fully implemented. Basic financial and performance controls were also not adequate. And then the design and implementation of IT controls was also not adequate and remains unchanged from the prior year. The positive note is that there are no vacancies in CFO positions in the whole portfolio. Then on the check, which is basically the assurance provided, we say the senior management request because there was less assurance provided. Executive authority remains the same, provides some assurance. Internal audit request because in three entities there was no assurance provided by internal audit. The portfolio committee remains the same, providing assurance. Then on the act, we looked at consequence management, and there were entities where we reported compliance findings on consequence management, and therefore there was a regression in that area. We say that investigation of prior, particularly from wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure, also remains a concern. And the amount that was not dealt with at year end was still not assess the financial viability of the entities in the portfolio. And our assessment is that the Capital Control Board has a material uncertainty on whether it can operate in the future because of its financial viability. It has disclosed in the financial statements that there is this material uncertainty, and also the steps that will be taken to deal with this issue of financial viability for the CCP. Also, if you look at the financial statements, it does show that the liabilities, current liabilities exceed current assets, and they also made losses for the past three financial years. The other concerning areas are the Department of Defense, which whose budget was cut by 2.6 billion, and also the issues of payments not made within 30 days, also at defense. And if they had paid those payable, they would have incurred unauthorized expenditure. DSB also is not paying payments payable within 30 days, and if they have paid the 125.1 million, they would also have incurred unauthorized expenditure. Then we break down the irregular and useless and wasteful expenditure for the entities in the portfolio. Firstly, I'd like to just take you through the definition. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure means expenditure incurred in vain and could have been prevented or avoided had reasonable steps been taken by the entity. Then irregular expenditure means expenditure incurred in contravention of key legislation. Goods were delivered, but prescribed exam procedures were not followed. That's one thing. Then if you look at fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the total amount incurred by the portfolio for this financial year is 82 million. Of that 82 million, the contributors are the Department of Defense with 75 million, the DSB with 3 million, and AMCO with 4 million. Then irregular expenditure. The total irregular expenditure for the portfolio is 898 million for this year, moving from 721 million in the prior year. And the main contributors are the Department of Defense with 717 million, the Special Defense Account, the DSB with 21 million, and AMCO with 12 million. Of this irregular expenditure, I just want to point out that on the defense, the 717 million also includes 142 million that was incurred because of overspending on their budget of employee costs. So mostly it's SPM related, but that 142 million in defense is due to competition from employees. Then a further analysis of this 898 million incurred in the portfolio shows that it was a 25% increase if you compare with the prior year, and also that of that amount, 150 million was because of multi-year contracts, meaning that contracts that were entered into in the previous financial years but remain irregular and must be disclosed as such until the contracts come to an end. So 18% of that is because of the multi-year contracts. Then 10% of that amount, which is 86 million, relates to payments that were identified for the first time in 2017-18 and had to be disclosed as irregular expenditure. So they are relating to the previous years, but they were identified by the audit team in the 2017-18 financial year. So they are also part of that 898 million. So in short, we are saying that of the 898 million, 72% represents non-compliance that happened in 2017-18 financial year. Then we summarize the most common findings relating to supply chain management, which then resulted in that irregular expenditure. Is competitive bidding not invited? Re-quotations not invited? Suppliers' tax affairs not in order? Or they were not confirmed that the supplier's tax matters were in order? And lastly, the declaration of interest was not submitted by the supplier when they were bidding. Then we also report on potential fraud and consistent management. There were three audit teams on which we reported findings of consistent management in the 2017-18 financial years, and those are the Special Defense Account, the Department of Defense, and the DMD. We also note certain allegations that we report to management for further investigation, and we summarize them to say that allegations were not investigated in the DOD. Investigations took longer than 3 months in the DMV, claim and any findings that reported for investigation, also analyze the issues that we have now brought to management's attention in the current financial year. So there are three categories that we've brought to management's attention for further investigation in the current year. That relates to suppliers who submitted false declaration of interest, which must be followed up. Also employees that failed to disclose interest, those are in the DOD. And also other supply chain management findings that require follow-up, and those are in the DOD as well as DMV. This slide then summarizes the key root causes behind these findings that we are reporting on. Firstly, we are saying that there's a lack or slow response to security key controls because the findings are recurring, meaning that management did not implement controls to prevent those findings. The next root cause is inadequate consistency or poor performance or transgressions against legislation. The third one is that adequate action plans were not in place, or they were there but were not monitored. And then lastly is instability or inadequate resources for critical positions. In this slide, we summarize the status of key commitments that were accepted by the committee in the previous year, and we also indicate the proposed commitments for the current financial year for the committee. The status of the prior commitments is that all the commitments that were accepted by the committee are currently in progress. And then we've got the new recommendations for the committee to consider. In the previous year, we reported to the committee that we implemented the status of records review, which is basically an early warning for the accounting officers to indicate areas that they must address in order to improve audit outcomes. We have implemented the status of records review at three entities, which is the Department of Defense, Special Service Account, and DMV, wherein we've identified issues around financial management, procurement, performance management, and compliance with certain regulations. We will implement the status of records review in AMCO for the first time in this financial year. We have not planned for implementation on the CCB as yet. In closing, we will refer you to this model, which is for anti-corruption. Basically, what the model says is that because our entities are a monopoly in their specific sectors, and they've got discretion to make significant decisions, if there is no accountability, that might result in corruption. So we are again emphasizing the importance of accountability. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Angie. Honorable members, I reckon this kind of report is mainly to empower the committee with information so that when we do our oversight on the entities and the DOD as a whole, we should have an information. What we should do is there are any points of clarification. You may ask the AG, and then after we may release them and then go on. Over to Honourable Members. Honourable Marie.
Chairperson, the first question is, well, maybe it's unfair to first pose it to the Auditor General, but first to you as Chairperson. One of the matters that we've got every year is the Special Defence Account, where they say that they are also restricted in terms of the audit of the Special Defence Account. You remember on a number of occasions it has been said that we can have all the information but in a closed session. Now I think that's now for the number of years that we've had that assurance, we've never had that closed session to talk to on the Special Defence Account. So my first question is to you, when will we have that session? It's been promised to us, and we just seems like it's just vanishing every year on the agenda. So that's the first very important thing, because we know that the Special Defence Account has been mentioned. We know what the original purpose for the special defense account is national acquisitions. We know that last year, this time around, a huge lot of money, probably equal to that amount that has been mentioned by the Auditor General, was moved for salaries, for HR costs, which is it's taken away the opportunity and the ability to acquire and procure equipment. So we need to get to that. I mean, at this stage, as we sit here, we know that the state of equipment in the defense is going down very, very far, and in some cases non-existent. And we don't know what the state of the special defense account is, when we know that there's no new procurement, and we know that there's no accountability on those things. So that's my first question, in terms of the special defense account, whether you've got the same argument as last year in terms of your findings. And then secondly, I just want to make sure for myself, on slide 20, where you refer to the allegations of financial and or potential fraud and misconduct. Now, those three, each is 20%. That imply that 60% of all allegations has basically been done nothing to that. Because it's 20% for allegations not investigated, it's 20% for investigations that took longer, so in other words that was investigated, and then 20% that are not properly investigated. So if you can just bring that into context, whether that's 60% of all cases or whether there's overflowing or you know, on that we just know exactly what's going on. Chairperson, yeah, in terms of just clarity.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable.
Honorable Lukameda. Thanks, Chair. Now, I accept and appreciate the presentation from the Auditor General. And I think we need to close this chapter about the Special Defense Account, because we've discussed it before. And as status, when we wanted to interrogate the Special Defense Account, there was a requirement that members must be vetted. And there was some reluctance for members to be vetted. But in any case, I'm sure the Auditor General, in their dealings with the other committees, because there was a recommendation in other committees that maybe the Inspector General of Intelligence assists in these special defense accounts or other security accounts, so that they could get some comfort in that. Maybe they could just, you know, give us some comfort on that, whether they are able to release the Inspector General, so that whenever the report comes, it has some weight. But for us to discuss it here, I don't think we have got authority. Because it is a special defense account. We must just engage our colleagues from our own parties who serve on those committees so that then they engage and get to the right deep down into the meat of this thing. Thanks, sir.
Honorable Isao, Honorable Mshongo.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Honorable Chair, my concern is always that we do criticize the department. We want to force compliance and improvement and the performance of any department. However, some of the mistakes that are made are recurring. And I'm just saying that how often do we meet with SCOPA? It seems that SCOPA have more powers to pursue the financial irregularities within departments and to take it to a different level where consequence manage is a matter of major concern. At this moment, consequent manage from our portfolio side and a criticism of department does not seem to be very effective. So I'm saying that if it's possible that we then drive a process between two committees, between ourselves and SCOPA, so that we get the desired result and there are consequences. And that we don't leave the matter only to our discussion at this time of the year, where we criticize the department, and of course we expect them to respond to it, and then people just carry on with their bad habits.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sarah. Honorable Trevor.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll be very short, Chairperson. You see, Chairperson, the challenge facing our country at the moment is enemy number one of the state, which is corruption. And to close one eye or two eyes on it has proven to all of us, without exception, that we might end up being stateless in the eyes of the whole world. This corruption has permeated through and through almost each and every state organ, without exception. Treating it with kid gloves can actually mean that we are shooting ourselves right on our forehead. What I wanted to find out from the AG's office is this non-existence of consequence management, is it due to structural defects or just negligence? When you were investigating this. And Chairperson, I'm raising this because, you know, if we can close our eyes on this enemy number one of the state, which is corruption, particularly with the organs of our own security, we've seen it within police, we're dealing with it very robustly and mercilessly. Even in defense, if we don't actually then take steps as recommended by the overarching institutions like AGs, whatever, to actually ensure that the committee is empowered to take executive oversight decisions that will be given to the executive for implementation, we would be failing in our fiduciary duty as an oversight organ that must assist executive. So, yes, I agree with Honorable Chief Whip of the ruling party when it comes to special defense account, but it must also not be used as a forest to hide wrongdoing. Because once we allow that, we have seen it with intelligence organs of this country, that people just use secrecy in order to just defeat the ends of objective of that particular organ. It must be monitored. It must not just be left unto itself, because once you do that, we'll be risking a danger, whereby then you will find that the whole thing is eroded. That's why then I just wanted to find from the AG to say, is it through the structural problem or just complete negligence? So that we can be able to actually then, because if you look at this, it tells you, Chairperson, it raises concern to me to say, it's so unfortunate that we are at the close of this last parliament. Because DOD, you can see that there is a serious problem there. Serious problem, Chairperson, I don't want to lie, which needs some serious oversight interventions from our side. And we mustn't actually brush this under the carpet. Because if we do that, we'll be doing injustice to the country. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for your comment and the matter that was, the first matter that was raised by Honorable Murray, indeed, but we may not discuss that in this committee. Let us refer it to the Joint Standing Committee again. We'll make follow-ups there. And then in terms of the SCOPA, indeed, we may have to invite SCOPA in our meetings. We'll just discuss it further in the committee as to what approach to take. And AG, you may answer what you have to answer. That you may start with the last question from Honorable Plongo, and then the other questions will be answered already.
Thank you, Chairperson. On consistent management, what we found is that the cause behind it is that the entities are not conducting the investigations on time. out whether there was any negligence on the part of the employees, or they didn't follow process, and then you must take consequences for that. So as much as if the investigations are not done, then entities are not able to implement consistent management. So we must ensure that they do these investigations and that they find out if there are people that add in the process, and then they must take the consequences. So that's why we also have a slide wherein we indicate whether there was investigations or not, and that was the basis for the findings that we reported on consistent management, because the investigations were not done. Then the other issue that was asked was on additional assurance regarding the use of intelligence, Inspector General of Intelligence. We have had these discussions with all the parties involved, including the other security agencies, to say, can ITI help the ADSA in terms of getting more assurance in this environment? However, at this point in time, we have not concluded on those discussions. They are still ongoing, because the Joint Standing Committee of Intelligence also did raise concern about assurance that is given at that level. So there is ongoing discussions or engagements with all the parties to see if there is assurance that can be obtained other than the one that we get, which is not adequate from our side as the Auditor General. Then there was a question on slide 20 to say, what does the 20% mean? So that 20% is basically saying that one of the entities, one out of five, which is then 20%, and then we indicate in brackets that that one entity is a DOD, meaning that those allegations that we are saying were not investigated were in DOD. However, that is not the number of allegations. It's just reporting on the number of entities with the allegations. So the detail of that was reported to management, and they must follow up on those allegations. I'm not sure if I left anything.
You didn't leave anything out as far as I'm concerned. And then thank you very much. You may take leave, and then we will now invite AMSCO. You can just quietly invite.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, just on a matter of procedure, shouldn't the researchers first present their analysis to us before we engage the partners on the entity? I see it's put right at the end of the program, which means it's not even to be considered by any of us.
I'm not sure what the other members. The outcome will still be the same, whether AMSCO start or not. The research will still be the same.
I mean, due respect, sir, we've always used the past, and that was the, in terms of the committee program, the objective yesterday. We were always being briefed before any annual report and submission by the, so that we are well informed in terms of the issues that has been investigated and researched. So, I mean, you know, if you say that we must be briefed by our own people after we've interrogated the specific entity, I mean, that's like starting next year and then working back to this year. I just don't understand that logic. It means that, you know, we are wasting the time of our researchers to inform us on the matters. So in other words, we cannot do our work properly in terms of oversight over the interviews.
Thank you very much. I don't think it will stop the world from turning. If we quickly allow our researchers to take us through before the AMSCO. Honorable Gamede?
No, Chair. You know, our researchers do a lot of work. Not only today. Each and every time one has to have a meeting, they give us some research material. And in most cases, never presented. We have the documentation as the usual giver. But there is, we sometimes decide just to ask them to brief us. It's not that it's a hard and fast rule. They've given us some information on research, and they've given us some documentation on what they're going to present. They actually contacted us and said, refer to this and refer to that. I don't mind if it gives them 5 minutes to highlight whatever they want to say, so that we move on.
Okay.
Okay, then. Yeah, over to you. Quickly. The documents are here. While they are dealing with the technology, can you go on? Also, we have hard copies.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll run through this very quickly. Just the main point, the hard copy, as you said, were distributed to members. If you look at the front page of the hard copy that we submitted, it's also on the second page of the actual research document. There's about 7 key issues that we can consider when looking at the ARMS for annual report. Firstly, as just discussed by the Office of the Auditor General, in the middle of that graph, we can look at the audit opinion, and the ARMS will receive the clean audit for which they should be lauded in this regard. One of the other key issues that arose on the right-hand side there is developments regarding to the dockyard. There's been developments in the past. There was supposed to be an agreement between ARMS Corps and now the Navy for the joint functioning of the dockyard. However, this has since been retracted. The keys here was that the decision was previously taken for the joint management of the dockyard. However, the current annual report notes that the transfer of the dockyard from ARMS Corps to the NAL was governed by a transfer agreement containing suspensive conditions, which the NAL had to fulfill by 28th of February of this year. However, the NAL did not adhere to the suspensive conditions, and as such, the minister has decided that the dockyard transfer agreement has lapsed. As such, it was also indicated in the annual report that the dockyard will explore a variety of collaborative measures with the private sector. And I think members can just interrogate the collaborative agreements or endeavors that are going to pursue in that regard, and the general management of the dockyard to service the South African Navy. Other aspects that can be looked at is furthering commercial opportunities for ARMS Corps. They've done well to increase their profit in this regard, but it would be good if further interrogation of the actual commercial opportunity of ARMS Corps can be done by members, and this includes looking at the further exploitation of intellectual property by ARMS Corps, which was also addressed in the previous discussions between the committee and ARMS Corps. But if we can look at further discussions about how IP can be utilized for revenue generation in ARMS Corps. And then maybe I'll just conclude with this. Two aspects. There's a lot of reporting in the annual report, where in the previous annual report, actual figures were given for the subsidiaries, like Gerotech, Protechnic, the hazmat facilities. Actual figures were provided in the previous annual report as to the profit and losses of these subsidiaries, and this is not done in the current annual report. and I think it would be useful if that perhaps could be discussed by members, just to get a feel of the progress or regression of these various subsidies. And lastly, something that came through in the annual report is the actual impact of the happenings at the NEL on Arms Corps itself. There's been major delays, specifically in Project Loop Aster, which is the acquisition of new infantry fighting vehicles for the South African Army. Major delays regarding the project, up to 32 months, and as far as I could understand, this is largely due to delays within the NEL itself, which then also has an impact on Arms Corps. So I think a discussion can be had about the impact of the NEL on Arms Corps. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Jordan. Can we go to Castle Control Board, please?
Thank you, Chair. The PowerPoint presentation as well as the Word document has been distributed. We start out there on page 2. You find out there some of the highlights. And the first highlight is the one that was also pointed out by the Auditor General, and that is about the clean audit. And also this 4.5 million rand ring fence subsidy that was given to the castle for the repair and maintenance work. And also that has increased the visitors numbers, and also they received some awards. Some of the challenges, and I think it's something that the committee has dealt with before, relates to the negative perceptions around the unfounded claims of corporate infringements. And I think it also dealt before is that the Castle Control Board Act is not in sync with the realities, and that needs to be changed. And the other challenge there is also with regards to the safety and security of both the visitors and the staff to the castle. If one looks at the next page, you'll find there briefly the financial performance of the castle, and you'll note there that they've basically been underspending with 85,000 rand, but that's a huge improvement of last year. Last year the underspending was for about 1.7 million rand. The next one is with regards to revenue, and there I think is the crux of the problem with the castle. They have under-collected their revenue with around 2.7 million rand. And one of those things that come out there is the huge drop in the rental income. The next two, 3 pages deals with the financial statements, but that have mostly been covered by the AG, so I'm not going to cover that, except to say that or to emphasize the AG's concern around the castle being a going concern. In the document, you will find around 21 references to a going concern. And the AG states there that there is a material uncertainty relating to going concern or the financial stability of the castle. Because if you look at a financial statement, you'll see that they have about a net loss of around 2.6 million rand. And that the assets, so other way around, their liabilities actually exceeded the assets with around 236,000. I'll move over to the next issue, and that is the overall performance of the castle. They set itself around 18 targets. They've met around 15 of them, so that gives us a success rate about 83%, and they spent around 99%. Of their budget. So I'm not going to deal with the specific programs and how those are performed, except to say that when we come to the risk management, and that is now when we deal with the governance issue of the castle, you'll find that, like previous years, they identify their risk, but they don't come up with the action plan. And in both the case of the DOD and of DMV, you'll find that they always give us an action plan to how actually to address these strategic risks. The next issue deals with the fraud and corruption. They say they don't have an anti-criminality plan, but they have a fully fledged fraud prevention policy. But then we want to know, what kind of training do they give the people there to actually deal with fraud and corruption. The next issue deals with human resources. They have around 16 full-time members there. And the total expenditure for employees is around 5.7 million. Now, if you compare that 5.7 million are employees with their revenue of 5.8, you will see that it's a very high percentage, or the ratio is very high between the total expenditure on employees and then the total revenue collected. So there is a concern around that. The last issue is just with regards to performance rewards. We're not so much concerned about the amount that has been given, you know, to the CEO or the CFO. It is just that they indicate that these amounts are provisional. Now, even though the amounts are provisional, they need to come back to us and tell us what did they pay, you know, the CEO and the CFO in the previous years. Because then we can actually go back and try and pick up a trend around that issue. Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. You received the document in time. And this meeting should be enriching for both AMSCO and Castle Control Board, because we never held a meeting in this form. Very enriching. We do this because there is no meeting of the portfolio committee that is held in camera. Everybody is welcome to attend meetings of the portfolio committee. If it was not a reason of space, we would have a house full every day, so that people must listen to what the government is doing. AMSCO, over to you. You will be assisted to talk to your presentation because of the presentation that came before you. And I see that AMSCO has new members, and what I would do meanwhile, I'm going to introduce the honorable members for the benefit of new members. My name is Malusi Stolimutimele, the chairperson of the committee. The first honorable member in red is Honorable Mhlongo. The second honorable member is Honorable Isao, members of the committee, and then we have Honorable Marie, then we have Honorable Gamede, the only woman so far in this committee is Honorable Dambuza. Can you introduce your team as CEO?
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. Good morning to everybody. To my immediate left is Dr. Moses Kandile from our board, followed by Sipong Konazi, Head of Acquisition and Supply Chain Management, followed by High Commissioner Ndlovu, recently joined our board last year, then Mr. Chibelika, who's been on our board for a number of years now, heads up our Trade and Investment Technology Committee. Thereafter, our company secretary, Mampe Kumalo, followed by Professor Noel Mkaza, who heads up R&D, followed by Solomzi Mbaza, advocate Solomzi Mbaza, who heads up corporate support, followed by advocate Sene, Boitsoko Sene, who heads up business assurance, and followed by Kathy Nionaki, who heads up corporate strategy. Then on the right-hand side in the corner, Henty Jansen van Rensburg, Dr. Henty Jansen van Rensburg, who is saving our dockyard currently. And then with the red tie, I don't know if he's recently joined a new party. our CFO, Gerrit Krobler, I'm sure you all know him very well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You will meet
It's not Gloria Gaynor. It's our good friend Normandie Sussman, who heads up corporate communication. Chair, that is basically the scope. I'm not going to talk to each item. If we could move on to the next slide. The strategic context, you will know that Arms Corps has for many years relied on a transfer payment from the Department of Defense. That payment, as you know, was reduced significantly for a three-year period. It was close to 400 million, I think it was 389 to be exact, and it was allocated, the reduction was allocated over a three-year period. The funding shortfall continues to be an existential threat to Arms Corps, but you will also know that Arms Corps has focused on alternative funding and alternative markets to sustain itself. Our relevance, as you know, is determined by the SANDF and the prime clients. We're at the cusp of operational efficiency and sustainability, or perhaps one could call it at the edge of a cliff. We can either pick up a convection current and rise to new heights, or alternatively we may free fall into a dismal abyss. The turnaround strategy on time in time towards a sustainable future, I'm sure you're all well aware of that now. It's about the urgency of delivering services. Danelle was mentioned, a major Achilles heel for our supply chain at the moment. In our view, there is a meltdown in the defense economy currently in South Africa. The benefits of delivering beyond military and technology advances, high technology skills and economic growth, the defense force and arms corps must become a greater and visible asset to the economy, and partnership and collaboration with state-owned entities becomes more strategic than ever before. All of these matters, strangely enough, it was quite paradoxical, and I'll speak to it in one of my last slides, was that the state president, during his opening speech of the AAD, which was a very successful event this year, spoke to many of these issues about leveraging of assets, about finding new forms of income and new ways to fund the defense force. He spoke about international partnerships, the fact that we're open to investment. So all of these themes will drive what we're speaking about. You'll know that the strategic turnaround, a new customer-centric structure, we've introduced supply chain management, business enablement, property leveraging and management, as well as business assurance, which combined a number of risk-orientated functions, and the organization required a far broader scope and scale for our group executives to ensure that there's proper integration and to ensure that there's standardization of approach. Sustainability and commercialization has been a key theme of the organization. What drove that? Because quite frankly, one could have just scaled back, cut staff, you know, done the typical thing that most organizations do when there's a sector in distress. Our view was not to do that, but to find ways to sustain a very important skill set and a very important sector for the South African industrial base. So we have perhaps run against the stream to try and sustain the organization and to sustain the skills that exist, not only for defense, but for the entire security cluster and for our allies in Africa and elsewhere. It's an industry that leads the fourth industrial revolution in terms of artificial intelligence, robotics, and a whole variety of other technologies that are pertinent to the fourth industrial revolution. So from a from an interdepartmental or strategic support required, the funding aspects, firstly, the transfer payment impacted the most by a three-year reduction. There was a shortfall allocation from our reserves, which was basically instructed from both the Department and National Treasury that we shouldn't fear, but we should dig into our reserves in order to sustain the current service paradigm for the entire Department of Defense. our response to that was to cut costs and not to dig into reserves as much as I think we could have, because ultimately those reserves are there as well for a stormy or rainy day, in order to make sure that if we are forced into a cutting back mode, particularly in terms of staff, that there can be compliant exit programs for the staff that are directly affected. In terms of the SKA, you will know that was a major issue at one stage, but we have successfully, with the help of Professor Mkaza, negotiated a very capable and competent coexistence agreement, and so far so good. We continue to test our artillery without compromising a very important scientific program that collaborates with a whole variety of nations across the world. The broader utilizations of Armed Forces complex acquisition competencies and capabilities in the security cluster and other state-owned entities, we are pushing hard. We presented on several occasions to the security cluster. We have also engaged directly with the South African Police Services, directly with corrections, but it's very difficult to finalize some form of agreement between ourselves and those departments. Our view is it should be a no-brainer. No one should second-guess us. We are the best at complex acquisition because we've got more than 500 scientists and engineers and technicians who do that as a normal daily activity to assess, to evaluate, and to ensure that the products give us good value for money and that they are compliant with the user requirements. In terms of our performance of core functions, we'll start with acquisition. There we achieved our target of 95%. In fact, we exceeded it. In terms of the maritime systems, you will know that the acquisition of the hydrographic vessel, that process is complete. They are busy with reviewing designs and issues of that nature. SA Shipyards was awarded that contract in the Port of Durban, and that program is moving forward. In terms of the multi-mission vessels, the IPVs have been contracted with Damen, South Africa, in Table Bay. That process as well is underway. There's a visit, I think, to Amsterdam shortly by the engineers and the Navy to look into the review process of the design itself, and that has also been contracted. The offshore patrol vessels have not been contracted. There's no budget for that at the moment, as you will know that most of the SDA projects have been pushed to the right for many years to come. We will speak later to this notion of, are there not alternative ways to procure, are there not alternative ways to fund the overall capital program of the Department of Defense. The midlife upgrade of SA frigates, the project is at a concept phase and the platform functional study has been completed. Of course, remember, all of these things speak to the previous financial year, even though there are other activities taking place as we speak. Airborne systems, new generation short-range air-to-air, the development of the ADARTA short-range air-to-air missile system for the South African Air Force, co-funded by the Brazilian Air Force, is at its final stage, and the last missile testing, in fact, this speaks to the last year that testing has taken place already. The landward systems, the new generation infantry combat vehicle, those processes endure to replace a very old, an antiquated rifle vehicle. However, you will know because of our challenges with Danel, that program has been set back in excess of 2 years and will probably be set back for another 2 years given the fact that one of their major suppliers has been liquidated, and as many other suppliers could be liquidated in the future, to move those capabilities to other companies or back into Danel will take 18 to 24 months, particularly in terms of the construction of the hulls. So this program, in effect, could be set back for up to 4 years. The ground-based air defense system, the first phase of the ground-based air defense system, what we call GBAD, the GBADS program. The local warning segment has been delivered to the South African Army as an air defense artillery formation and is operational. The second phase of upgrading the gunfire control system of the 35mm anti-aircraft guns has been completed, and the third phase is battle management, command and control communications and information integration within the mobile air defense system, MOBADS, and to a higher order user system. This phase is progressing well and remains on schedule. The Landward system, the common weapons system, new generation tactical communication systems for the entire SANDF, the design, test and evaluation has been completed. In terms of our research and development department, the test and evaluation facilities continue to function, albeit with limited budget allocations. There are, as you would all know, serious repair and maintenance issues that will face us moving forward, but the current transfers will never, they're not there to cover those critical maintenance programs. What we are doing is looking to new income streams from countries and companies from as far away as Germany, Italy, Singapore, and even Australia. Gerotech, which covers the issue of vehicle testing, there we're relying more and more on commercial vehicle income. There is still testing by local defense companies and by the SANDF, but to a limited extent. And the only way we can remain buoyant in terms of preserving those strategic infrastructures is in fact to contract commercial companies and to derive revenue from those activities. In terms of operational and scientific research, armor development continues. Pro-Technique continues to look into our defensive chemical warfare activities. HAZMAT looks at broadening its product range and has done good work in that regard. In Ergotech, we've replenished our staff there. You will know that we lost a number of staff members in the ergonomics field, but we've successfully found highly capable people to fill those posts and to assist with, for instance, the new service dress for the SANDF. Defence Decision Support continues to do very successful work within the SANDF environment. The operational and scientific research continues at the Institute of Maritime Technology, IMT, based in Simonstown. This is certainly a capability that we cannot afford to lose. It's a capability that has developed a number of very interesting products, in fact, so capable that a number of international institutions as well as friendly states are engaging us to try and harness the type of IP that's being developed there. A good example would be the ultrasonic and broken rail detector, where we've been testing in India, and we are busy negotiating a joint venture with the Build in India program for the Indian market only, and hoping to develop further within the South African context together with the CSIR as well as Transnet. The Minister of, in terms of the dockyard, it's already been mentioned, the Minister will not permit the Donnell process to proceed. We, in the meantime, have been instructed to rejuvenate the dockyard. We have, in my view, achieved a lot in that regard. The dockyard is now running very close to break even. Currently, the deficit has been reduced from 30 million to 4 million for this financial year, and will probably be at zero. In other words, we won't have a deficit by the end of this financial year. That doesn't detract from the fact that if you require a major recapitalization program of the dockyard, one would probably need a private partner, but that has not been mandated at this stage. So we work with what we have, we maintain what we have, we fix up what we have, and we are using every possible skill set to do that. In addition, may I say that a number of our military-based maritime companies are in the process of subcontracting the dockyard, and to that effect, I think we will achieve success, and we will keep our people very busy and achieve new revenue streams. Included in this would be companies such as Nautic, companies such as Damen, companies such as SA Shipyard, and even some of our South African shipping, not shipping, but fishing companies. We have also sought assistance from the dockyard. Obviously, all that has to be done with the approval of the sovereign head of the Navy, being the chief of the Navy, to ensure that we don't compromise any defense work within the dockyard environment. In terms of transformation, I'll take this, the BE slide as read. It's fairly clear that there has been slow progress, but certainly a bigger impact over the years. We're really looking forward to the gazetting of the Defence Charter, which is now finally sitting with the Minister of Trade and Industry, and that will provide very clear guidelines as to transformation in the sector across the full scorecard requirements, but it's been uniquely panel-beaten with the help of Arms Corps through the National Defence Industrial Council, but it will have a big impact. In terms of employee satisfaction, that has risen marginally from 67.62 to 67.97. You will know that our employees, obviously at this stage, are nervous, and there's a level of anxiety within our ranks. We employ in excess of 1,400 people. Our succession planning process and our capability retention process is working very well. Skills development, in my view, Arms Corps is a leader in that area. Our bursary program, which we perform on behalf of DoD as well, has been exceptional in terms of getting youngsters into the maths and science arenas in the main, and our dockyard apprentice program with 92 apprentices continues at great speed. Corporate social investment, you will all know about some of our major programs there, but you can see just by scrutinizing the slide that we cover a wide variety of rural and marginalized areas, people who, if we weren't there, they probably wouldn't have access to this new fourth industrial revolution and this new move that is taking place worldwide. So youngsters are being encouraged to study maths and science. When they enter the university and technical college environments, we are encouraging them to study for skills that are appropriate, not only to the defense sector, but to the nation as a whole. They need those skills. In terms of our corporate objectives, I'm not going to go through each one, but in the main, the organization obtained around 66%. You'll know that 60% is full compliance. Anything above that is what we call exceeding the objectives. There were a few objectives we didn't achieve, but as an aggregate, we were way above the compliance level of 60%. Thank you. Could move on. Financial performance. You will see that there, even with the reduction in transfer, there was for the first time, a small surplus of 1.7 million. You will see that there is a growth in income. We've got a long way to go, honourable members. We're not near to where we could be one day, but we've started from a deficit-based organisation when these big reductions were introduced. Even with the reduction in transfers, we managed to obtain a small surplus without compromising our service levels. you'll see that operating expenses increased by 7.8%, and as you know, there are many new costs across the spectrum in terms of inflation, which cover issues of water and electricity, increased building maintenance, and you know, with buildings, if you don't maintain them, you get kicked out of the buildings these days. So one has to maintain buildings and look after one's infrastructure. The liquidity is looking good. Our asset base is there. The value is there. The organization has our liabilities are nothing in comparison to our asset base. We would never be challenged in, for instance, a liquidation order or anything like that. Our payments are on time. We're processing our financial reserves, I think, exceptionally well. Now, this is a slide which was presented to us in the Plenary Staff Defence Council, the PDSC. I'm sure you're all aware of that august body, which is a combination of the Secretariat of the DoD as well as the SANDF Heads of Services at the level of General and Admiral. With all these budget cuts, we are now starting to, and this was presented by Chief Defence Material, it concerns the capital budget. These are the programs that will, in all likelihood, and it will be the only programs that receive budget over the next few years. So everything else, all other projects, will be taken off and pushed to the right, to outer years. So between now and 2022, these will be the programs that will be running. In our view, Palama won't even have sufficient budget. That's the new infantry logistics vehicle. Bufaster, Byra and Hotel, and DTD, all of those projects, quite frankly, by 2022, if you look at the bottom line, the delta, we won't be able to honor our contractual obligations. Now, this is a projection of the future based on the current budget planning within the DoD. That means, you can look at all of them, they're all in delta, from 2022 right through to 2026. Now, this may not happen. There may be significant adjustments, there may be a replanning and a re-engineering exercise by the DoD of how they're going to allocate resources. But based on the current allocation, we as Arms Corps will be in default in 2022, which means that Arms Corps could end up being challenged in the greater credit environment by suppliers who have been contracted, but there isn't sufficient budget to pay them, which is a serious situation, but we've been open about it because this view is shared by both ourselves and Defence Material. We understand that what is happening is because the HR budget is a significant budget, and the Defence Review warned about this, as did we in 2015. That issue has to be addressed because the budgets have been cut more than we ever expected, but the HR matter now is digging into the DoD overall cost allocation. So if you look at these slides, for instance, sorry, it's not moving, no, there it is moving. Okay. If you look at these slides on the screen, these are just some projections because we expect either in the forthcoming financial year or the outer years that this attrition within the funding system of defense will eventually reach our front door. Now, as you know, we almost, in this financial year, had another $350 million taken away from us. Fortunately, we managed to engage productively with the department and the ministry, and that didn't happen. If that had have happened, we would have lost at least 30% of our staff. These are skilled young black female engineers, male engineers, young South Africans who have been well qualified, who would face potential unemployment in the marketplace. These are people who have invested heavily. But because there's no capital budget, there may not be work for on-school complex acquisition. The evaluation of projects, the testing and evaluation of projects, all of that work would be, could we just go back to that slide, please, thank you. All of that would be reduced to nothingness. Sorry, sir, why don't you just move to the next slide? Thank you, to that slide. So these projections are looking at different percentages. If you look at the top portion, that would be different percentages removed from our budget. And in each percentage, it would give you the delta of what we would need to generate in order to sustain that particular set of services in terms of the service level agreement, as well as to other outside institutions. So in a very short space of time, we would have to make sense of, for instance, servicing the security cluster more in order to derive other revenues. We would have to find more work within the African continent, and we would probably have to look at sweating assets of the DoD, which still, not a single property, not a single set of IP has been transferred to our balance sheet in order to sweat, in order to assist the DoD in funding the defense review and the capital budget. We have done everything we can as OMSCOR. We have signed the SLAs, everything's done, but we still need that to happen. Commercialization of IP, the foreign markets are knocking on our doors. They don't want to own our IP, but they want to co-invest. They want us to license the IP, and it would mean billions of rands for our industry, as well as for our fiscus and our tax base. But more importantly, it would add to the budget of the Department of Defense through the good offices of Arms Corps. The second slide at the bottom speaks to our reserves based on what would happen if our current transfer is reduced by a particular percentage, and the figures you will see very quickly run into brackets, meaning our reserve will be usurped, depleted, gone. So we are doing our homework, because our view is you always plan for the worst and you hope for the best. We're planning for the worst, but we need the nation, the citizens, we need the people representing us in Parliament, the most sovereign body of this country, to please take note that it's not just about arms corps, it's about a defense economy that drives industrialization, that drives skills growth, that is at the essence of our future economy in this country. And if these things aren't taken seriously, our defense economy is in meltdown as we speak. It's in meltdown. And we need funding support, but we also need, all of us need to budget more prudently and to sweat our assets and our resources and to harness every rand we spend. We need to do it more productively. And if that doesn't happen, we are going to one day have to answer to our children and our grandchildren, why did you let the defense economy collapse in South Africa and the defense force? Do you remember this slide, members? In 2015, next slide. In 2015, I used these three elements. I took it directly out of the defense review. And I said, and we said as Arms Corps, mandated by the Arms Corps board and EXCO, that the imperatives, if you look at the split between HR, operating budget, which is for MRO and everything else, and capital budget, over time, the budget is going to be squeezed, the capital budget, which is in green at the top, is going to be squeezed to death. That's where we are now. We warned about this, and we said, let's sweat assets. Let's find alternative ways of funding. These chickens are now coming home to roost. Driven also by South Africa's GDP, which is on a downward scale. In fact, over the last 10 years, South African GDP in real terms has decreased by a quarter, by 25%. So 25% of the economic activities in this country have dissipated, meaning that the fiscal requirements for entities like Arms Corps and the Department of Defense just aren't there. That's why we have to sweat assets. We have to. We've got no choice. Next slide, please. You'll also remember this slide in 2015. This was presented at every forum within the military and even to this august body, where we said we can either go the high road or go the low road. The high road is the green portion, where we would sweat assets, where we'd have more of a business approach, where we would assist the SANDF. But we can only assist if allowed to assist. If allowed to assist. The red road is the demise of the sector, of the SANDF, and of Arms Corps, where there just aren't resources to do anything. And we unfortunately are now at that critical impasse where we need energy, creativity, and permission to do that which we can do to arrest this decline. Next slide. Some of the remedies, sorry, just go back to the slide. Some of the remedies, they aren't on this one, unfortunately. Some of the remedies, firstly, as I've said, to activate asset sweating of Arms Corps properties, including DoD properties and redundant properties. Now, Arms Corps properties are in the process of being concessioned to generate some revenue, even if it's just for us, to keep our boat afloat. Arms Corps becoming the single acquisition agency for the entire security cluster to enhance value for money and economies of scale for the state. Recommended that Arms Corps obtains a direct national treasury annual transfer to assure that we have financial stability. They are public entities, they may service other departments, but they still get their transfer directly from treasury. So that is something we're preparing, we'll be submitting to the minister. An alternative funding mechanisms for the Defence Review Implementation Plan, especially the Special Defence Account and the Capital Acquisition Project. Now, there we have engaged foreign companies, we've engaged foreign countries, we've engaged China, we've engaged countries in the Middle East, we've engaged South Korea, we're engaging wherever we can. There's a willingness on the part of those nations to provide soft capital, but you've got to repay it. Now, those are things that we've got to take through the system. And it could be that National Treasury says to us, sorry, that's our role. But at least we would have done some of the spade work to look at how we can fund our capital budget at defense. And we need to look at alternative remedies such as leasing or lease to buy, a credit installment programs as we did with the old special defense packages. In terms of our way forward, you will see there that whichever way we look at it, if our transfer is reduced by, say, 350 million, as I said earlier, it means a 30% cut in staff, and it means that savings cannot save Arms Corps anymore. We've saved as much as we can. It will mean staff cuts. And it's something too terrible to contemplate in terms of the type of people we have. They're an asset to the state. and we should retain those people and use them even if it is in other areas of the state, because once we've lost them for good. And then finally, the next slide, you will see that our achievements, at the moment we have healthy financial liquidity and solvency. The defense sector charter is almost in place. Delivery on core business, I think that's improved. Our internal transformation, I think, is commendable. Impact on communities is there, you've seen it. Our challenges remain the capitalization of some of our bigger assets, such as the dockyard, such as Geritech, such as Alcampan, such as ProTechnique. Those are assets we have to invest in order to keep them relevant. And the funding challenges of the organization as a whole, given the fact that we know that the capital budget is being depleted almost completely, and that will cause people within the DoD to say, but why do we need arms for acquisition? Why don't you get rid of most of your people? Because we don't have money, we don't have the number of projects anymore, so what are those people going to do? And our task as the leadership of Arms Corps is to find a way to use those people and to ensure that we are sustainable going forward. At the moment, our future is inextricably and umbilically linked to the Department of Defense. We continue to service them with loyalty. We take guidance and leadership from them. But by the same token, we should look at a broader marketplace, which we continue to do. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, CEO. Honorable Gamende.
Thanks, Chair. There's one major question I want to ask before I ask other questions. Two people have given arms for different findings, the HV and our own research. Now I want to ask from you, which finding do you have before I ask other questions?
What was the finding about audit?
Chair, I will speak to it and then I'll ask my CFO to perhaps give you more intricate detail. The finding that took us from a clean audit to a unqualified audit, there was only one. It was about 3 million rand. It was a procurement of a certain service for the Alcampan Lodge. In the previous year, we had detected and we had condoned. We did it again. Their view was we should have prevented it from happening again. Now, in the context of expending 10, you know, around that was about 6 billion within the SDA, there wasn't a single finding of an arms court transaction within the SDA. In terms of our total budget of around 1.5 billion, there was only 3 million that caused that migration of the finding or of the final audit category from a clean audit to an unqualified audit. we are going to be having a long discussion with Mr. Makwetu. We had a short discussion with him at AAB. We don't understand why it was migrated from clean to unqualified, because the formula used in terms of materiality was not disclosed to us. So we don't know what that formula is. But we accept the finding, we accept it, and we will work to detect these things earlier, to avoid condemnation, and to ensure prevention. But in the total scheme of things, it was a very small, and in our view it wasn't material. But anyway, we accept that. CFO, I don't know if you want to add to that.
Yes, so Chair, we agree it's on record, but unqualified that they got sold with findings. So we agree, and it's our work as a committee to say all these years we've been smiling about the clean audit. and we want to continue smuggling. If you could actually, you know, rectify which whatever has been identified by the AG, so that you keep that record. Secondly, if you could explain to the community what are the real reasons why, up to date, assets haven't been sorted. Because you've got assets, your own assets, DOD assets, and you go outside and say, we need money, we don't have money. When you have money, what are the reasons?
Chair, Arms Corps assets are in the process.
CEO, let us take the question.
Okay.
Your company.
Sorry?
Honorable Murray.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to follow up or basically go on where my colleague has ended. In the Auditor General's report, it also reflects on assurance provided. The Arms Corps management, senior management, is now yellow. It seems like there's a reflection on senior management and doubt on that. But then we know also from our own researcher that your salary increase was over 20% in this specific financial year. So can you give me, or the committee, a breakdown of the salary increases, the justification for an average of 23.1%, which is out of the ordinary, specifically taking the reduced budget, your own concern that you've expressed about HR being portion of the total budget, and then the economic conditions in South Africa. In that 23.1%, you must also tell us whether that's salary increases or other benefits and bonuses. Because we know that in the past year, the information that I've described is that it was senior management received quite nice bonuses. Based on what do you still give such a huge bonuses and salary increases in a year like this? My second one is that will link to that. Your core activity, according to the Act and to the principle, is acquisitions for the Defence Force. Now, by your own admittance, that is nearly nothing at the moment, given the constraints that we've got. So I find it difficult that your core activity you cannot fulfill, but increases and bonuses and additional benefits like going to the Cape Town Jazz Festival, things like that. And I will not leave you on that one. You will hear from me, and any time you spend money like that, you will hear from me. And going on hunting trips and things like that. How on earth do you justify that, given the realities of the Defence Force? Then I also want to find out, I know that your core activity is acquisitions, capital acquisitions for the Defence Force. We know that Danielle is the one that you work with normally. Quite clearly, Danielle cannot, like Wolf Esther and the others, cannot give you the vehicle that we want. But from what I have seen of other South African private sector role players that was at Waterkloof, at the AAD, there is fantastic equipment available from the private sector. Can you source from private sector, or are you obliged to only source from Danel, those kind of things? We have seen in terms of the capital provision that you have mentioned to us, but just before that you told us that Hoefeister will probably be delayed by another 4 years. But in terms of that allocation, there's no delay in Hoefeister. Can you not source that from other private sector companies? Because we also hear that the defense industry is going to zero because there's no acquisitions. But your acquisitions is only to Danel. So do you not have an obligation to work with other private sector companies that has got, if I can nearly call it, off-the-shelf equipment. The one thing that you have not dealt with and addressed is quite clearly what is happening in many, many defense forces these days is cyber acquisitions, drones, things like that. It seems like that's not on the table whatsoever. Also in terms of the project that you said that we will look at the next couple of years, it's only Biro and an hotel and basically Hoop Eister and nothing more than that. So I'm really concerned that that you know it seems like your core activity as a ship to try to establish a business that's looking after himself irrespective of the original objective of Arms Corps. And obviously somehow one must say is Arms Corps a vehicle that we want for the defense industry to fulfill that role, or has the role of the Arms Corps changed in terms of acquisitions, for instance, and doing all the other stuff? So because that is what I picked up, and it was quite a bit of a common concern to me. On Outcome Fund, I know that you said that you want to source other international organizations. There's been no reference to the test facility in outside Bergasdorf, whether you're involved in that as well. Now, have you had any confirmations? I know that you said that you're planning and you intend to do that, but have we had any confirmations on that? Because purely, you know, a promise itself is not just not enough.
The confirmation of what?
Of foreign countries that will come
use our base.
Yes, Outcome Fund, for instance.
Thank you very much, Honorable Murray. Honorable members, we left in 15 minutes for questions and answers. If we can move fast, zero in into our questions so that the Arms Corps can respond before we close the session. Honorable Mhlongo, are you okay to answer the ask?
No. No, Chairperson, what I wanted clarity on. Arms Corps and DNL as state-owned entities. Is my understanding correct to say each one will have to ensure recapitalization of the other in the process in order to avoid reaching liquidity state? I'm trying to come to understand what Honorable Murray was also raising, because if Arms Corps, Chairperson, was to go private, leaving its partner, DNL, unattended to, that it will mean that it will actually then washing its hands or absorbing itself in terms of ensuring financial stability of a very important state-owned entity and getting hijacked by people who will never come to the rescue of the state because they are just there for profit-making. So I think we also, as public representatives, need to be very careful about that, as much as this thing is required, but at what cost to the capability of the state looking after itself. But then my question was to say, if you go to what you raised, which to me, I think it came from the previous defense review, if those things are not addressed and we happen to lose such a high-profile staff within Arms Corps, what challenges will that have to our defense capability as a whole, understanding that Arms Corps actually then must actually rejuvenate technological capabilities and all that moving forward? Then lastly, if you go to page 37, When we talk of activation of asset sweating of arms or properties, including DOD, blah, 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 equipment, is it possible for that to happen without DOD undergoing a clear review? Because to me, Chairperson, I'm very much worried. If our defense force doesn't have a strategic, it will only, our in my understanding, our defense force will have a clear strategic direction guided by its defense review to say where it should go. And that will also put challenge to the state-owned companies that needs to be supportive of that to say they must actually then rise up to that particular level. Now, even only if the defense force is just on its own locked up in this particular gloom situation of being directionless, to me that thing is not only a threat to our own defense, to our own national security as a country. It's just a threat even to the continent as a whole. Now, I wonder if that can happen without the presence of defense review, so that we can have a well-thought path to say, this is what we need to achieve and by when, and be able to attach time frames and also cash value to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Tonko. I thought you were on record as in the previous defense review. I think you were referring to the current.
The current
defense review. 2015, that will be corrected. Honorable Sam.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think one of the key issues that we have raised over the years would be the stockyard, which has been a serious problem for us, and then also servicing the sea vessels that require to do patrols, etc. Besides silver mines being down and our signal units being in a mess. We'd like to know from Arms Corps, now that it's in the hands of Arms Corps, what progress, and of course the person that has been appointed to head that project in particular, what is now the progress being made and how things have turned around, and are we looking at some profitability and that we have a far better service from the dockyard particularly to the Navy. The other one, of course, is the issue of the dips. There's a number of dips, and we'd like to know what is the spin-offs from the dips, and the one that has been outstanding has never been resolved since 1999. The old historical one that we've asked, and we asked that matter to be settled, that has never been settled today, and what is the actual status of that particular dip? Of course, the request is also that the one reporting in the previous financial year, the 2016-17 year, on the various entities that was the subsidiaries of Arms Corps. And this year, of course, we didn't have those particular figures that were included in the past. It's not included. Just to give us an update on the progress, I know they've done exceptionally well, so that we just have a view on the improvement on the income or return on investment in those particular Indian subsidiaries. The other matter, of course, is the one of the SEM. There is one that is speaking about 12 million in terms of the auditor's report. And the one of the 3 million is actually on irregular expenditure, reflects that is on 12 million, and the fruitless and wasteful expenditure is at 4 million. If we can have an explanation of those processes, and if there's been serious contraventions, were the consequences management done in that regard to the particular employees involved in that process. The other one, of course, is the issue of the human resources. We see that there's a reduction in the number of staff, but there's an increase in the payment of staff, the cost of employment. That has increased quite a bit. And also at the different levels, we find that the increases in senior management was quite high compared to others. So we just wanted to get some idea of how that was done and what are the reasons for those increases that have taken place. Of course, on the other side, we have an issue of procurement. I'll be talking here especially of the one that is off the shelf. We have a target, a goal of delivering on 60 days. but the reality is that we take 114 bills. Now that's supposed to be the easier way of procurement because it's off the shelf. I would like to know what is the reasons for the delay in that being executed, not in 60 days. The other one, of course, we want is to know the issue of, I know the sweating of assets is an issue. The CEO did allude to it and speak to it. But if that matter is now being put on hold completely, and it's only now those properties that reside under Arms Corp, that they have control over, and all other considerations have now been placed on hold and put one side, which will of course limit the scope of revenue being generated for the defense. The other matter which is a concern is the what we call the to engage with DOD to influence better alignment of capital projects, finalization through life capability management acquisition policy. That project has been put on hold completely. And how does that impact then on the performance of Arms Corps if that has been a project that they are directly involved in? The through life capability management.
TLC.
That's right, TLC. I think, Honorable Chair, that would be fine for now. Thank you very much.
We have 6 minutes. Mr. Wakefield, what? Can you utilize your 6 minutes?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to very quickly ask Mr. Mkwanazi to respond to the questions relating to supply chain acquisition as well as DIP. And then I will call upon the head of the dockyard, Mr. Anthony Gunther van Rensburg, and then to the CFO on the financial questions, and then to R&D at Professor Mkaza on the questions relating to IP, and I will cover the asset sweating, and together with Mr. Advocate Mbaza, I'll also speak to the issue of the so-called increases. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I will start with the question on DIP, which is the requirement was supposed to be discharged by the company by the name of MBDA. It is coming quite a long way from the SDAs. We have had a number of plans submitted by the company in terms of discharging those particular DIP. And however, it has failed for some time to a point where we had also decided that now they pay penalty. But unfortunately, at the time, the penalty in terms of the policy, it was very small. Now, if you go for penalties, you lose in terms of the discharge of the DIP, if you look at the value in terms of the rent value. So the decision was that let's try and pursue the one where we'll be getting the most, which is still to ensure that they discharge the DIP. So we have had some number of opportunities. There's one on the table right now in terms of localizing the manufacturing of the missiles where they will be in a position to discharge those particular DIP to a point where at one stage we had a plan that they will be also doing some maintenance of the missiles. Already a test bench was supplied to DML, but now with all the problems that are happening, that also fell flat. So we are pursuing it. But the alternative of them paying the penalty is still on the table. They can easily pay the penalty. They've agreed to pay the penalty. In terms of the 60 days, which we couldn't meet as a target, that is as a result of the number of reasons. I'll just go for two of them. In terms of the target itself, it's a very stringent target if you look at the tendering process, because we are required in terms of compliance to go out on an open tender for about a minimum of 28 days. So just going out on a tender 21 days, and thereafter now do evaluation, do all that, we tend to find that in reality it tends to be quite a very stringent target to meet. However, we have put up processes to try and also improve on that particular one. But the major one that has really affected us is the change on the compliance in terms of the pre-qualification that is required these nowadays, as well as also the tax compliance that is required. In some instances, when we are ready to process, you find that the company doesn't have the tax qualification. Then we can't proceed, we stop. They have got now to get their tax compliance in order, then we move again. And then you lose something like 3 weeks or so while they're sorting out themselves. So that's one of the reasons that has affected us not to be in a position to acquire that quartz, which is like the same off the shelf, because of those two processes. We are reviewing the targets to ensure that we sort of improve on that particular one. And then I think those are the two under acquisition.
Thank you.
I think since the last time we presented, last meeting we presented there were a few meetings that we had internally. We started with a renewal strategy as we were tasked by the Minister and the CEO. And we touched specifically on certain capability elements in terms of renewing, which is the people, the organization, certain sustainment and processes, technologies, equipment, infrastructure, and consolidation of that. So there's a strategic plan, renewal plan that we compiled. We've touched on that renewal items that we've identified. We're busy implementing that, and we phase that in three focus areas. The first is stabilization. We're looking at the immediate and the current financial year, how we stabilize, get to a break-even situation again for the year, and also some actions to start with a renewal. The second phase, 6 months to a year and a half, 2 years, we said we're going to look at growth and development of people, organization, equipment, and so forth. And then the third phase is a bit more 2 to 4 years, where we said we're looking at sustainable development, taking the dockyard forward. So that's how we structured the strategy. The strategy is based on 6 pillars, a financial strategy, HR, market development, I'll touch on that a bit quickly, and supply chain, because we're doing a lot of procurement to be able to do our work, and stakeholder engagement. And most of these already started off with that. 41 strategic initiatives with 189 plans under that. So there's a lot of work that went into the plan in the past 6 months, turning around the dockyard. So some of the successes we already got, the Navy will always be the first priority, making sure that we support the Navy. In the recent exercises, we got 4 of the ships of the Navy operational and out. So we're already adding value to the Navy, including a submarine that was not operational for a long time, that's out in operation. So on the commercial side, we also engage with industry at the CEO, we look to working upstream acquisition with Darman, working on certain work for them, but also looking at other projects, on the tax and so forth. We need to re-establish capabilities. To do that, we need to bring in work to keep the people current, to keep them busy and utilize those capabilities. There are a lot of very good workshops with very good people that we can do, and develop that going forward as part of the market development initiative. And developing people, using our artisan training center, putting a strategy in place for that to bring the youngsters into place. There's about 100 now, but we're engaging with other environments like West Girl and some of these organizations to start investing in terms of development of people and so forth. So I think that's in short in terms of the plan and strategy.
Thank you, Henshi. I think if we could have Prof. Nkasi.
So there was a question on Alcanpan. I can touch on that. And quick one on Alcanpan. Our foreign clients are Germany, Italy, and Singapore. The local client, our main local client is RBM. We are going to take a bit of knock there because of the accident that happened in RBM and won't be able to perform some of the tests. It will have an impact on our bottom line at Alcanpan. Italy has had a severe cut as well in its defense budget, piggybacking on Germany. So we have a little bit of a challenge there as well. Singapore are responding positively to us. They want to increase the number of tests, the number of containers, who are in negotiations with Kuha, who are looking at increasing the containers that they bring to the country from 25 to 53. Now they are going to 70. Devon as well want to experiment and see if they can handle the amount of containers that they can bring in. So that is the response on about foreign flying. On IP, as the COO alluded, we've got unique technologies. The two major technologies we have that are not found anywhere in the world are the UBRD and the shock repellent system. On UBRD, we are insensitive at discussions, quite advanced discussions with India at the moment, and they are quite encouraging because they are quite keen to have our tools deployed because of their issues with the readiness on that side. The shark repellent system, we started negotiations with the shark, KZN Shark Board. We've had to put the discussion on hold out of respect because they've had accidents as well. I think it was on the news, just to give them a bit of time to breathe and sort out their issues. But we have no challenges. We are obviously looking at other, the whole catalog of some of our technologies. We are in the middle of also discussions. We started with Sami as well, who are interested in some of the DoD owned IP, which we are the custodians as Arms Corps, and we are taking the lead in terms of negotiation in the aspect of IP. So that's basically where we are. That's where we are.
Thank you. Thank you.
Harold Kobler, CFO,
just on those
order matters. I think the CEO only mentioned 3 million of the total of 12. Was the rest also included security contracts that we extended, as well as a non-compliance with the 25% black equity we applied as a flow through from the previous years? I think the AG in the remarks, conclusions also said that those were outside management control. So I think that's why the CEO only mentioned the 3 million instead of the full 12 million. In terms of the wasteful expenditure, that is basically we are as harsh on ourselves as on the contractors. So it includes a million of penalties for late delivery from ourselves, facilities to the department. And then it also includes a portion that we are paid to Telkom. But we are still in negotiation with Telkom to get value, other value for other teams apart from the disaster recovery that we didn't get. So we are still planning to get full value for that, but we have disclosed it in full.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the last matter, Honourable Marais, on the salary increases for the group executives, because it applies to the group executives. That you'll remember, we went through a benchmarking, a turnaround. The feeling was we needed a more coherent team with a broader span, in order to ensure that there is no duplication and that we have people who assume more responsibility. Based on legal opinion at the time, and this was in 2016, we received input from senior counsel that said, you've got to give opportunity to people within the organization before going outside. So a whole band of positions called general managers basically was removed completely, and it was replaced with group executives, and there were fewer group executives in comparison to the amount of general managers we had. Those group executives were basically made redundant, general managers, those positions, and a new tier of management called group executive was introduced, which was fewer people with a bigger span of responsibility. Based on a benchmarking study, those people did not receive increases in that year, strangely enough. They received salary adjustments if they were placed in those positions. Those salary adjustments, based on a much broader scope of responsibility and a benchmarking study, that adjustment was 13% on aggregate. The bonuses received by Arms Corps staff are between 8% and 10%. They're performance bonuses. If you meet your bonus, your balance scorecard requirement, your immediate manager signs off that you get a performance. performance bonus. So if you calculated your 20% or 20.76% or whatever it was, would include the adjustment, a once-off adjustment, if they were successful to get into those positions, number one, and number two, the performance bonus, if they were successful. Because not everyone gets a performance bonus. But in general, Armed Forces staff tend to meet their balanced scorecards. In terms of the asset sweating matter, Chair, I think that's very, I'm sorry about taking more than 6 minutes, but the asset sweating matter is an important matter. And the issue of Armed Corps, remember, what I was speaking to there was not our budget, with the green and the blue and the red, the 2015 figures. That was our main client's current predicament, which we've predicted. So if the capital budget shrinks, by ipso facto means our acquisition people don't have as much work as they had before. Hence our response to that is to find alternative work for them within our legislative mandate, not outside of our legislative mandate, in terms of the Armed Forces Act. And that's what we do. The choice is to cut people or to sustain their livelihoods because they are still relevant to the broader security cluster and to allied nations. It's not about selling the soul of the nation or the soul of the defense force, it's about propping it up. In terms of asset sweating, yes, it's an important element. Armed Corps is sweating it, its assets. You'll see there was a big tender out recently calling for concessionaires on our respective properties, but they are minuscule in terms of the property base of the defense force. The SLA in place requires the defense force to transfer properties to us to sweat. Now, we've got an SLA, but not a single property has been transferred. So we can't force them to transfer a property. We can't force them to transfer IP. We can only say, here's the SLA, we have it. We have the competency. We've invested in some property experts. We are ready to assist, but we can't force it. So we just pointed that out. Chair, I think that's all.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I didn't hear any of you having problems with the sustainability remedies, which means that it is supported. But what I want us to do, I want us to prioritize the asset sweating matter. We should call the DOD as a matter of urgency to come and present the program as to how far they are, and then if the DOD needs any support from the committee or any assistance, we should do likewise. Thank you very much, CEO. We'll now take the only shortest presentation with pictures and everything. The Capital Control Board.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks very much.
Hello.
Hello.
Exactly. Yeah.
And in
preceded the Constitution, it precedes the formation of the South African National Defence Force, It precedes the National Heritage Resources Act, which is another act that we are under. We've got to get those things all sorted out, and there's some minor things to attend there and some more important things there. And we would like to get that done before we can take the castle through to World Heritage status, which is the longer term goal, and is supported within defense. And then secondly, there was discussion on losses. Yes, we are very mindful of the importance of being a going concern and the pressures on the Castle Control Board's balance sheet. The losses of the last couple of years, those have been driven primarily by the utilization of an accumulated surplus that the Castle Control Board had put together. The CCB does not get a state subsidy out of National Treasury. There is some measure of support from the Defence Force. We have been moving strongly towards carrying our own salaries and remuneration bill and using our surplus towards that. At the same time, I acknowledge and appreciate the support of the Defence Force, who have come to our support, particularly with integrated conservation management plan costs and other restoration work. We've just come out of the Castle 350. So those losses over the last couple of years, that has been a deliberate rather than an operational failure. And then secondly, what we're looking at very, very strongly is no leakage out of the citadel. The castle must earn its keep. We have terminated the unofficial, informal, undocumented subsidy that we've been giving to our museum partner, Ezeka Museums. That has been terminated. We are taking great steps to ensure that the revenue generated on castle premises comes back into the citadel and is not dissipated elsewhere through any other organization, however important a public entity or government department they may be. But we are doing that humanely, compassionately, and trying to make sure that all revenue is brought to account and properly controlled under the PFMA according to proper supply chain management prescripts. And that's been the philosophy that's driving through. Management's focus is not only on managing the entity, which is the board, but also on managing the citadel so that we can promote access, utilization, and that when visitors and scholars come to the castle, there's a take-home message. This is a centre of reconciliation. Some of the old things that happened at the castle in the days of yore, this is not how things are happening today and into the future, but this is a building that is an important citadel for education and for building good citizenship. And that's the message that we're trying to portray. If I can hand over to the CEO to tell you more about how we're proposing to do that and how we've done it.
Thank you, Honorable Matumela, Honorable Member Tambuiza, yes, Honorable Member Isao, and in absentia, Honorable Member Marie and Honorable Member Kamede. Oh, some also in absentia. I can't believe that is the 6th October that we are together, and I hope that for the past 6 years I've made you smile, to quote Honorable Member Gamene, but also that we smile together as we go to the future. For that, I only need one thing from you today in order to make us also smile, your Honorable Member. I'll come to that. Could I just say that the past year, despite some of the things that the AG pointed out and the research team pointed out and our engagement with you also pointed out, has been a good year, and I think we have a good story to tell, and we will keep on telling that good story based on a very difficult and a complex past, full of contradictions and full of armed colonialism was not easy, and our people feel that many of the debates on land. Later in the images you will see, the story tells a picture. I will reflect some of those things that we entertain between the five walls of the castle. We have five walls, not four walls, as I have been said. Then, I also aware, listening to the earlier inputs, that our country is in a difficult situation. Like yesterday, they were doing an analysis of the middle class, and they say the middle class is in so much debt, they are one salary check away from poverty. So precarious is it. So in that context, I think we understand the pressures on all institutions and all families to do that. So I think we are at a good wicket, and with your support and your robust interrogation, we will move forward. That introduction, I think the presentation is very short, and then I will just flip through some of the images that will tell a story of a year that was. There's always a difficulty with when you do a retrospective analysis, because many of the things happen in the 3-4 months after that. So quickly, Chair, I don't know if the electrical engineers left us because the lights are not hopeful. All the members know where our mandate comes from, and because Mitchell has explained some of the difficulties that we have, some of the difficulties of that mandate. But despite that, I think we are doing well. And if you look at point 5 there, if we look at the risk, I know the researchers have spoken about the risk and the absence of a formalized risk action plan, but I think what we're doing is actioning the risk instead of having just a simple plan where you tick it off. I think we deal with our risk on a daily basis, as you will see, you know, between the 109 pages of our annual report, and if you have the submission there, you will also see it there. Then this is the brief that I've been given. I don't have to repeat it. It's in the document that accompanied us. I will try at the end of the day to summarize our discussion on the basis of those 4-5 points that you see here. Just if you look at our actual performance, Chairperson, as we presented to you in our annual performance plan, and I think again the AD reflected on that we've only partially missed 3 of the 18 performance KPIs, the key performance indicators. The one I think you're aware of is number of interns. We've promised that we will host 30 interns at the castle, and we have only managed to have 26. The other one, heritage project that we've not implemented, but those, Azola is here, we have implemented them. Except for the moving of the koi crowd, we have already implemented them. And the other one is in revenue. And there, I think we're up from 3.9 million the previous year to 5.8. So it's an upward curve. Very soon, I think we will reach where we will have parity in terms of revenue as a factor as we compare it with our expenditure. So we're moving in the right direction. The CFO is there to back up that, and we have a remedial plan to deal with our going concern issue. Then, just in terms of budget performance, I don't think you can see it well. The only two areas of concern is that we've radically reduced our two programs, our Zola program, which is public access, and the tourism program. And in terms of the things that I want to ask you, if we can, when we do the presentation to the DOD or to DPBEC, that we look at boosting those two programs, because I think, again, if we look at the images, if we can double our output, if we just do a nominal increase in those two programs, deficit. Then the summary of revenue. I think I've spoken about revenue. I think we have increased it, but we really set our target in the new year. To add another 10-15% onto our revenue output. And maybe if I don't get to that, but there are 3 things in terms of revenue that we need to get clear about. First of all, we don't get any direct funding from the fiscal or the mother department. So the school kids, 25,000 of them last year, the tourists and the other visitors essentially subsidized the activities of the operational activities of the castle. Then revenue is in the main driven by gate-taking and by events, major events, commercial events, but also filming and other smaller events. So if we look at the point that I made about the performance of the economy, so if the economy is not vibrant, people don't have discretionary income, the revenue situation of the castle will always be a pressure point, especially because every 1 of April, one of April is a very important time of the year. From 1 April, we basically stay start the year with zero budget. So we need to hope that the month of April will make enough income, and that depends on how Easter falls, for us to pay the first month and then to pay May, June, July. And if you know the tourism cycle, that's normally also coinciding with a low cycle. You know, the low tourism cycle in South Africa, for that matter. So that's always the pressure that we will be under Jefferson. And I'm preparing you for the one big decision that you have to help me to make this smile in the sector. Then human resources. The point that I want to make there is highlighted under bullet 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Although human resources is a major cost driver in the CCB, we have managed to call close to 1 million rand from savings posts that we don't fill, the fact that we did not pay the cost of living increases, I don't say it's due, yeah, it's due to our employees, and we've also, to answer the researcher, we haven't paid a single cent in performance bonuses this year, based on the 17-18 cycle. And I also now with honesty foresee, and I know there are two staff members here, that we will build up a liquidity, that we will be able to do that. Because all our staff contracts say, although there is provision for bonuses or performance incentive to be paid, that's always subject to whether you make the cut in terms of your performance, and secondly, whether the organization has the money, the funds to do that. So I can't foresee, based on the financial performance of 17-18, that we will be pay performance bonuses, but we might, I think we will probably do the cost of living increases, even if it's only for the lower staff chairperson. Then I think most of these previous queries we've answered you in the May, did we engage in May? But I will quickly go through there. The one council, one controlling body, the Zico and Bakes thing, we've handed it over in our handover report to the executive authority, because we're going into a new MTSF now. So as part of that, we have put that into the report that the current minister will leave in the handover report for the new executive authority. The SANDF guards, we have seen a vast improvement, no reports of drunkenness, ill discipline. We haven't had any serious cases of the contradiction, serious cases of petty theft reported in the past 6 months. So I think clearly the interventions of fellow Feni is a pity it's not here today in terms of that part of the work of our work has been done. We have spoken about the decreasing surplus. The deputy chairperson has explained why it seems if there's a loss we've made a loss, but he's explained that it's because of the surplus. Then in terms of the strategic risk, we have a risk register, and we are monitoring the risk as they move in terms of likelihood of occurrence, and in terms of severity, we have a mechanism to deal with that, an internal auditor. The internal audit function, the company, once again, Mezars is looking. SAPMT is looking at that with management. I've spoken about the performance bonuses. So in conclusion, Chairperson, before I flip through the nice images, I've talked about the performance against set targets. We've managed that. If we have to deal with the low months in our cycle, April, May, June, July, we can do it two ways. We deal with the issue of the buckets. We've already dealt with Ezekiel to increase our revenue, but we ask for a almost operational subsidy, transitional, just for that low period, which we can always discount, give back if there's a surplus, or we ask Treasury to allow us to keep in reserves at least, I would say, 1 million for those low years. So I think I would like you to consider that as a mechanism to support the CCP, to just deal with it from the old year into the new year. And then the impact of reprioritization of operation of the SNF will be minimal. We're not talking about millions or billions or quarter of billions of rands here. We're talking about nominal amount just to deal with their transitional period. And then the areas of underperformance, I think most of them have been addressed. And then the measures to put in place to deal with the audit, we have a very strong active internal audit team in place. We have a very powerful, under Advocate Mitchell, audit and risk committee that's dealing with this. We have an open engagement with the AG. Every document that we send to you, or we send to National Treasury, or that we send to the DOD, the AG, our account managers always kept a copy into that. Even today's presentation, Simon has access to that. And so in Mandla, with you, always engaging Treasury around how we deal with these issues. So just a quick flip through some of the images. The clean audit, the auditors have never spoken about that. The PM, Africa PMR Media Awards, the highest accolade there last year. Then we host the Minister of Vietnam. The events, very interesting. Casper Novus's song is Titi Bowen. You know the Titi Bowen, oh, you're too old for that song. it's strange that they've appointed now Titi Bowen as the Minister of. So we want him back to come and sing that song again there. Ramadan Expo, Youth Day, what is this one? The Islamic Art Festival. Conferences, we hosted a couple of the District 6 media conferences on their land claims. We have regular art exhibitions. Tomorrow, Jefferson, you're all invited. We opening a international exhibition on Australians against apartheid. It's opening tomorrow at 6 o'clock, so you are more than welcome to get there. The Australian High Commissioner will be there, Australian Foreign Minister will be there, and I think Minister Isulu will also be there, no?
Yes, but she has not confirmed yet.
But probably will be there. Then the conference room, it's regularly used. Azola has got no more hair anymore, because it's military veterans, Department of Defense, private sector people using the event, the Khoisan community using the conference room like this one. As well, we put you in the just forensic evidence that the deliverable that you missed is now delivered in the Donker Stad if you are there. Some other exhibitions, conservation management. Very holistically, the reason why I put the picture of the bird in, there's a lady who's monitoring the bird population, the urban bird population. According to her, there are two bird species that's normally not found in an urban area that found peace in the castle. And you know, how you notice that is if they are breeding in the castle. Not this one, they are breeding everywhere. But I think it's the plover, and it's one of these weavers that's breeding in the castle. So we have a holistic approach towards conservation management. So we're not only fixing old pipes, we're also looking at the two guys who's cleaning the moat every morning. This is the pressure relief valve, because our pressure at the castle was at a level where it will burst the old pipes. So this pressure relief valve is controlling the pressure. You can still have water on the bastions, but it's a balance that's there. Then in one of the water halls, we had a Koi ceremony, training ceremony, the heritage program. We had a minister at the first ever, now as a traditional ceremony that's linked to the moon by one of the local Koi tribes. Minister of Sports, she was Minister of Tourism in that state. We had many people don't know, but the official millennium, the 100 years for Nelson Mandela and Mama Sisulu were both open. The press conference to open that last year was at the castle. Then we have the youth May Day rally there. We have the statues, people engaging with it, school kids. The legacy project at that occasion on the 19th of September last year, the announcement to have history declared a compulsory subject was mooted there. And now we can thankfully say the castle also played a role. History will be phased in and hallowed. Life orientation will be phased out and replaced by history, and that is an historic decision was also taken at the castle at this event. tourism programs. I wasn't flipped through that. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honourable members, for indulging us. And
thank you very much to you. And thank you again for the beautiful pictures. It's always a breath of fresh air. Now, what I want you to do is that you should give us a program of the events in time. Give us if there are events that are standard. Just give us a program, and then so that when honourable members are available, should attend those events. Thank you very much.
I'll commit to that.
Hello?
Yeah, we commit to that. If you look at the annual report,
yeah,
we've deliberately included all those events, and there are 137, and that's excluding the buggies and the military formations that's also having events. So we're talking about maybe 200 events at the Kaka. Some of them standard of the year, but the others are ad hoc, so people book a month before the time or 2 weeks. But we will give you the standard ones and the high profile, episodic or periodic ones. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
I would like to thank the presentation as well as commending the CASPO for not having the irregular events at this time around. But I've got two questions. One is around the issue of safety and security around for the visitors and staff to the castle. Has that issue been addressed, the issue of security of the visitors? And then the other issue in the report also raised the challenge of the shareholder argument. How could be this challenge should come as you are activating the partnership with other government departments? Then the other question, Chair, is around, I want to know, can you explain what is exactly meant on the setting of human resource components? I don't understand that. I think, Chair, those are the three questions that I have. Or the issue of the rating of irrecoverable rated backup. We need to take on that one. For instance, there's a rating of the amount of 220,000 raised as a receivable from the Department of Military Veterans, and so on and so forth. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Sam.
Thank you, Anuchi. I think the most important and critical issue is the one of going concern. We have listened to the CEO and also the Deputy Chair of the Council Board. And I think we need to actually see that how it is actually projected in writing. We can see a table of income and the revenue and the expenses. And I'd like to know the projected one in the event that Ezekiel's takings are done, because Ezekiel's supposed to get a third of takings. Now, if the takings are equal to 6 million, they're supposed to get 2 million extra. So I want to know the exact breakdown. If a head bucket that belongs to the military, if that is taken over, what is the current income for the head buckets, and can that then be projected? And of course we look at the restaurant here, which has also not been projected as profitable as the target has been set. So a time has been given now for 2 years, the second year going now, for the restaurant here, and we won't meet the target that is projected. So when will we meet the projected target that we initially had in mind, and if we're going to reach it? I think if we can get a clear breakdown, what is the optimization revenue plan for the castle, then I will be satisfied. At this moment, it is definitely uncertain, and therefore the AG's explanation is justified to say that we don't have certainty of a going concern. And that is a big worry. We depend on the 4.5 million subsidy for the maintenance, but that is ring fence and is specifically for maintenance. It is there for the castle, and the and DOD has spent more than 100 million on the castle's maintenance. So they were to sustain that, so that is actually not really impacting on the actual budget, which is due with emergency maintenance, and of course issues that may arise from time to time, occasional maintenance. That is to do with the routine maintenance of the entire building that has been done. So we know the 4.5 million is dedicated to that particular purpose. And therefore, the surplus, yes, has skewed things, but also the 4.5 million has skewed things. So if we say that it can be reduced from 68% the personnel cost to 48% because we incorporate something which is ring fence and doesn't really impact on the specific budget of the institution, then I've got the concern because the current money that's raised, which is 5.82 million, and if we look at the cost to employees, it then constitutes 90% of the current revenue generated. 90%. The overall cost, we look at the additional monies, we then look at 68%. And if we add more money to that that's coming in, it will be brought down to 48%. And of course, technically, we know we'd like to have an institution driving on 40-30-30. That is normally what the ideal is. Of course, it's not always possible. But we want to see how that can be achieved within the next 3 years and how the projections are realistic in the next 3 years. For instance, on the tourism side, if we say the country's in recession, the country's in recession, but according to the stats of Westgrove for this province, the number of tourists has actually increased because of the weak rand. And people are flooding here, even though we have challenges with the water issue, more people have actually come as well. So there is the potential that you can actually get more people to the castle, but that would also be targeted, of course, marketing that must take place. You target foreign visitors coming to the country and that they actually use the castle also as one of their destinations. So I think that needs to be looked at. Of course, we looked at the huge increase in the online marketing that has taken place, advertising, which is 488 million. Okay, there is some machine they use to assess how that is achieved. But that's a huge amount of coverage that the castle gets. And of course, it's very impressive. It's just a pity that DMV is not using something like that to promote their cause. In fact, it's totally under-advertised. So, yes, we want to commend the castle and also on the PMR award and all the other contributions they've made to all these different events that have taken place during the year. We want to encourage him to continue with that and, of course, to encourage also the local people to use the facility to promote culture, history, heritage, and things to be at the castle. I want to also raise the issue, the going concern is one of the major issues that I'm very worried about. Then the conservation management plan, has that been now fully signed off? Is it fully implemented? Has it been rolled out? Because this has been coming on for a number of years. That conservation plan has been there and we've seen it on the burner at the back and it's never been completed. I'm very happy about the progress on safety and security, that has been corrected and of course improves. In fact, we have some recent cases where dockets were open at the police station for petty theft on premises, things were stolen from tourists. So somehow we need to improve also the camera in the center yard is actually down. That people actually walk about and things. That's where the restaurant is and the curio shop is, etc. Just to see on the CCTV cameras within the complex that is actually working and that we actually have somebody monitoring. In fact, the soldiers that are sitting there, they're most of the time in that office, three or four of them. So if it can be said that they can actually monitor because they sit at the back entrance in that office all the time. The other issue, of course, we see the losses. There's been a net loss of 2.7 we see here. We see under collection, the financial performance. So these are concerns that we have, and unless it is projected how it's going to be recovered and how we're going to improve on it, the risk appears clearly. You've listed all the risks. We'd like to, as we asked previously, you did a nice job of it, where you put all the risks and you put plans that you've actually done with previous presentations that you've presented. And I think the committee would be very satisfied if we know what particular actions will actually be done and it's actually placed on record, and we can then follow up on what the progress is regarding those particular actions. I think the other issue that we also want to know is how far is the legislative review, because that matter was referred to the DOD and also for them to follow up on the status of this the castle, and of course to improve on that status and also the autonomy and independence of the castle to move it to a higher status, and of course to look at the review as advocates had indicated that it is also looking at the future of making the castle a World Heritage Site. So we just want to know what is the progress, because nothing has come to our notice yet, although it's been spoken about in our quarterly reports and also in our previous annual report. The issue that they also have is there's an indication that posts have been frozen. There's a saving of about 1 million that will go towards the income. And the issue is, what other posts are really necessary? If posts are frozen and they're managing at the moment, what was the initial plan to create more posts for, if things can be managed? And also the precinct manager has now again gone back to the defense. Basically one of our soldiers are in charge, like Captain Walker was before. And of course, as the matter is of, is the job description clear, is the management and supervision clear, is the CCB happy with the performance of a soldier being in charge of the precinct and is being run properly and the way they want it to be run. The other matter, Honorable Chair, which I want to raise is also the gift shop and the conference center. Can we have a breakdown of all the events taking place there? What is the actual income that we get, and how can we promote it further to get it into the business sector, into the corporate world, to get it into also the tourist sector, where the facility can then be exposed and we have people that are interested and attracted to that facility. It offers a lot, I mean, it's a very nice environment. It's a military set, base, and also a military precinct historically. So I think it's a very nice setting. And I think all of us are responsible to promote the castle as much as possible so that it can become sustainable and more people use the facility. So we'd like to just have more details of those things, and are those things actually fitted out in the best way, state of the art, that it can attract more corporate sector opportunities, and not only general meetings of our local communities or a specific event, but to also cater for the upmarket. People are prepared to pay to use that facility because it is a historical site. So I just want to say, if how can we actually improve on the facilities and actually to make it much more attractive? The other matter that I want to raise, Honorable Chair, is of course the let's get all my points here. Okay, the targets, I think we're all happy with the targets. The strategic risks have all been identified. Yes, the Castle Military Museum, I think there was the issue raised. He put a question on that matter, and it was indicated that it will be incorporated into the castle and will fall now in the ambit of the CCB, and it won't be an entity that's operating at the castle and that have to raise their own money, and they don't actually receive any, they don't receive any money anymore to sustain it. So the idea I got was that that will now be incorporated and it will fall under the auspices of the CCB. So I just want an idea of where that is, because that is also an important museum in the history of our country. The other matter, Honorable Chair, is the issue of the Ezekiel one. Has that been engaged with Ezekiel, because there will be a loss of revenue for Ezekiel? And what has been the response of Ezekiel? From the CCB side, it's clear they want to have the income come to the citadel, to the castle itself, and not to be taken to Ezekiel. And because they also, one of the members, one of the shareholders or the members on the board, that actually also have representation. And what was the real interaction going forward that we can get a settlement on that matter? I think we spoke about it for a few years now. It has never been finalized, and that income has always left the castle. Honorable Chair, the provisional amounts on the bonuses, I would like to know from 2015, what were the actual amounts paid out to senior management? Because it is stated in the report as provisional, so provisional is not final. After the year has passed and the bonuses have been paid, it becomes the actual amount. Then we have the actual amounts from 2015 to 2017. And we know the provisional amounts in going ahead, and the range of it, 5% to 10%, whatever, because that's what I see the range is here. If we can have actual figures, and we can see what the trend is. We know that the comment made by the CEO now, that in the current year, under discussion, which is 17-18, no bonuses were taken, and I think that is done in good faith, understanding the financial situation of the castle. And I think we should commend that and also laud that for that commitment made by senior management in also trying to build up the liquidity of the institution, that more cash is available, that we have no more surplus, and we have to build our own surplus now from new. There is no surplus. I think the increases, I've spoken about the performance. There's an increase on performance reward. I think we have mentioned that. I'm going to not go into the detail of that. And finally, I think I will rest my case at that point. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Yusuf. You have questions, you have comments, you don't have to. Guidance, and you can only go directly to your questions.
That's what I noticed, the intimate knowledge of your honorable members of the council operations, so I think it helps me because most of the comments is then in a constructive manner and will help us to further refine and make you smile broader, even Jefferson. Can I start with this, Honorable John Busa's questions on safety security? It also came up with the Honorable Isao. I think Colonel Fenner is really putting this thing to a goal. If you look at the where the break-ins in the car happened at the main entrance opposite the parade, so what he's put those booms there, and there's a physical presence of somebody there. So these cars do not park there because that's where the vagrants staying around the parade is breaking. So that's the one I like to refer to practical things. Then in terms of the security cameras, there is a RFQ, is it RFQ? Mm-hmm. Depends on where the amount is. That's run by Simonstown to replace the cameras. But there is not an absence of cameras at the castle. That's often misunderstood. At every bastion, there's a camera that's controlled in the city that's monitoring the crime or whatever situation around the castle, and in every museum there are cameras. Where I think I agree, the cameras needs to be in the courtyard. So if something happens in a concert, then you will be able to zoom in and pick that up. And that is, it's coming. Also a biometric system at the entrance, because if you draw attention, if you increase visitors, you also increase the probability of elements that will undermine what you're trying to do. So that is definitely coming, and better control at the entrance. At the back entrance that one of the honourable members referred to, we have very little say, but I can raise this issue with Colonel Fenning because that's almost a military entrance, and not a civilian entrance. Then the shareholders' agreement is part of what I wanted to ask. We have made a submission to through the executive authority, because there's no, apart from this outdated act, and maybe also answer the review of the act that we have also written to the minister as part of the handover. It doesn't make provision for a shareholders agreement, because the minister is the shareholder of the sole shareholder of the CCB. And in terms of that, there's nothing on paper that says in terms of that, we give you access to the building, we give A, B, and C, to empower the CCB, almost like a piece of assurance that you now can go out and solicit other funding or whatever. So that's why we're asking for that as part of the solution to deal with the uncertainty around revenue stream. There are draft examples of that. I think we've given them one to deal with it. And even this outdated act also makes provision for that. We must just then try to activate that. Then the running off of assets, Mandela, the 220 from the DMV, it's a kind of a complex, I believe that you will explain how it works in terms of the Afrotech claim. Then, obviously, the going concern is our key strategic risk, and it's right at the top, and it's affecting us. But if we activate, and I agree, we will provide that projections for the next, maybe for the next MTSF for the 5 years, if we should get the package, if we get a written agreement that Eziko is not expecting anything from us, but in fact paying us something, giving us a nominal contribution towards water, electricity, or the fact that they have access to the castle, then that projection will definitely help us. So we will do that for the conference room, we'll do that for the gift shop, we'll do that for the restaurant and provide it to you. But I must ask, I have sent you the big 350-page revenue optimization plan electronically. I just want to make sure you receive that. After engagement in May, we've sent that to you. But we can resend that to you, the study that we've done. So I will just perhaps resend that document. But immediately after the May engagement, I've sent that to the staff to disseminate to you. So that is equal. ICMP, under the leadership of our honorable member, she can tell us how far that is, because they're also paying gratefully for that.
Thank you, Chair. We've given the consultants 24 months to complete this. They've just submitted the desk desktop study, a draft version, which we now have another 2 weeks to go through and comment, but they are busy. We monitor the project, so I can't now tell them they'll probably have another 18 months to complete this. So the next phase, after we've agreed to the desktop study, they'll continue with the cultural significance. So they'll determine the significance.
Okay. Can we cover this issue of things, the HR, what do you mean by HR stabilization? I've explained that this is my sixth engagement. So in terms of what researchers tell you, or what people tell you about what is the optimal structure for a heritage site like this, they will come up with all permutations, but they don't understand the complexities of the site. So we now know that those 16 full-time members that we have, augmented by auxiliary staff or temporary workers, and by the support, the indirect support through the 4.5, is where we settle. So I mean, by settle, I mean that is, we will not go more or less than that. So that's the stabilization of the HR component. What I mean then in terms of what we then, out of that then, the post that we say we are freezing, and it's charity starts at home. For instance, I had a personal assistant in my office. And for an organization of 16 people, you don't need a personal assistant. Mandla doesn't have a personal assistant. Azola doesn't have a personal assistant. We can do with one shared resource to do that. So it's practical. It's forced by economics, but also by practical operational things on the ground. So we don't think that the structure will move anything out of cube in that. And I underline this time and time and again. Annual performance plans, operational plans, strategic risks are not implemented by machines or technology, by human beings. So they remain at the site of so much pain. They remain at the core. Then engagement, the online TripAdvisor comments that we get about Samir, the guy that took you, or about Shosho, that's the real bonus that we can get. At the heart of the performance that we gloat about here are your staff on the ground. And if we don't look after them, where do you go, where do a CA go, call a staff meeting and say to the staff, you won't get the cost of living. First, the people toy to it, parliament or whatever, the six what is it, 6.7? I think the cost of living increases there for the next 3 years? 6.7, eh? You're not going to get that. Neither are you going to get bonus. It's difficult to do that if you don't have motivators for the people. But it means that you have to have a good relationship with your staff and motivate your staff. And people like you, when you get there, talk to the staff and motivate them, is what we have to deliver this mandate. So it's very important that we don't demotivate people who are really, and the salaries are low. I mean, if you look at the salaries of our tourist guides, the real interface between us and the world out there. But it's 6,000 rand a month. So it's not really on par, but they get motivation through other means, Jefferson. And we need to keep that up. So Manga will do those projections in terms of the conference center. Thank you for marketing for us. You promised that you will say at all the engagements that government should come and use it. I don't know why we have this engagement here. You could pay us 800 rand and you will have a facility that's 22nd century in a building that's 300 or 400 years old. So and I thanks for saying that the uniqueness of the venue is really, we need to get the upmarket people. We have upmarket events where people who have a marquee tent have a quarter of a million rand to have the event there, just to have it at the castle. And if we can't sell a conference room, at 2,000-3,000 rand a go, then I think we all need to take collective responsibility for it. Dave can speak about the Castle Military Museum and the Iziko. I've done my best at management level to deal with the Iziko issue. I have given it as part of my handover to the executive authority. I think we cannot resolve that more. The Castle Military Museum, may I just say, we shouldn't confuse it. The Castle Military Museum was always a DOD facility under us. Let people not confuse the two. The Castle Military Museum Foundation is a friend of the museum that portrayed the museum as theirs, and they were almost peacocking as if this is it. So the fact that they want to disband their trust, it's got sweet nothing to do with the fact that the military museum is operating. Let me just give you that kind of assurance. Dave can talk about the dynamics about that. And then no bonus, and I was trying to get to this point in terms of performance bonuses. Maybe the honorable board members must talk about that. When I was appointed at a 20% maximum, and I negotiated that down with all performance incentives. With no other person except anybody for my cell phone, but otherwise, they don't pay for anything. The same goes for Mandla, for them. Just to put that on record. Besides that, I'm probably the only CEO chairperson whose performance contract, salary, all perks and performance bonuses in all the annual reports that you see. So I think it's there. I can put it out for you. But every annual report reveals, what do you call it? Disclose. You call it in accounting? Discloses, isn't it? Discloses all performance. To the letter, mine is in fact separately from the HR table also. So it's therefore for all to see, and the researchers don't show provisional. Let me tell you about provisional. If the financial year ends on the 31st of March, then we first deal with the Auditor General. The Auditor General take us through the clean audit, blah blah. It's only April, by June, the board committee will sit with the CEO and reflect back on the year. So you can't in that annual financial report say that this is a bonus. You must go to the next month to see for the previous year. So if you talk about 2015 to 2016, you must go to 2013-14 to look at the bonus of the previous year. So we can extract it to you, but it's all revealed. The reason why we say provisional in the current report is because the performance reviews only take place 3 months after you must correct me, no?
Yeah.
So that's why a provisional amount, and in this case, you can scrap the provisional amount because there's Aiko Mali to pay those provisional amounts for this year. Manta?
Yeah, thank you, sir. I think we do have those figures for actual performance bonuses that we pay from 2015-16 to 2017. But the provision is an accounting term, because it's a term, emanates from the performance, from the contracts. of employees. So we need to provide for potentially what we could pay out to staff members after the audit. So it's an accounting term. It's a provision. We might not pay it, depending on the circumstances that the CEO has alluded to. So I can give you the figure. The figure is from 2015, it was 112,000, it was the CEO. From 2016, it was 184,000, it was to the CEO and the CFO. From 2017, it was 224,000, it was to CEO, CFO, and the managers. So the three managers that were paid performance bonuses. The CEO and CFO's contracts, they were changed to the performance bonus from 20% to 10%. So that has been, and the provision for the 2017-18, which will likely not be paid, is 287,000. It's just an accounting issue. So we might have next year a lower provision.
That's for the CFO, CEO, and the CEO.
And staff that have performance contracts. It's 387,000. Yeah, but 387 is only for the top management. That is CEO, CFO, and the three managers. But we do make provisions because from that amount we can pay out all other staff members. Because you know, if my performance bonus is 20%, but I'm not likely to get the entire 20%. It doesn't really happen. And one issue, let me correct, the 4.5 million, it sits with CILOG. It's not part of the CCP budgeting process. So it's not part of our budget.
It's
real fenced with CILOG. All we do is advise, this needs to be repaired, this needs to be maintained, and then they do their own processes.
So it's not part of
It's not part of our budgeting, not at all. And the write-offs, the debt write-offs of 220,000, it's 270. The 220, I'll explain as well, the 50,000. The 220,000 emanates from the agreements we had with the Department of Military Veterans. They undertook to do three projects at the castle. It was the Mrs. Murphy, the relocation of Mrs. Murphy to closer to the military museum. And the second one was the refurbishment of the conference facility. The third one was the training of military veterans. So what happened when we advertised, with Mrs. Murphy, we advertised at a 90-10, so we're expecting it to be above a million. But the responses that we received were only for the RFQ, so in terms of the SN policy, we cancel that and re-advertise. And then it was decided between the DMV and the CCB that no, we must actually cancel that project. So they undertook to undertake those two other projects, that is the training of military veterans and the refurbishment of the conference facility. They did the refurbishment of the conference facility. With the training of military veterans, there was a change in management at DMV, and we already agreed with the service provider to do the training. So we had to negotiate with them, the Afrotech. They wanted the expenditure they have incurred to that date, because they could see that the project is not going to go ahead, so they accepted. In fact, we went to court. They didn't want to. We proposed that together with the CEO, with advice from the board and the audit committee, that we must settle with the service provider for reputational risk, to protect us from reputational risk. At first, they refused. They took us to court. In court, it was decided. I mean, they could see the case was going to favor us, so they decided to come up with a settlement, and we agreed to that because the legal fees we're incurring were going to be more or less equal to the 440,000 they were claiming, so we settled for 220,000. It's a debt write-off, but it's an accounting issue because you need to raise it as a receivable from DMV, and you write it off the books as a debt impairment. So that's how the 220 works. It's actually four journal entries that you enter. You first raise income, and then you raise a receivable. Then you do the debtor write-off. So in the income statement, it becomes nil. Then it's reflected in your balance sheet.
Is that being considered fruitless and wasteful expenditure because for the service that was offered?
We actually engaged with the Auditor General on that. Yeah.
But through you, if I could answer the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, in a sense,
the issue with DMV was an unsolicited grant coming through to us, which didn't actually materialize, but what drove the settlement was a recognition of value added given to the Castle Control Board that would, that equity demanded that there was some degree of compensation paid to the person, the party that had provided that. So it was not fruitless and wasteful. It was in fact, it gave a kickstart to training materials and training processes that we are now using.
And it was actually a saving on legal expenses as well. So we engaged with the AGO in this amount, so they were happy that it's not fruitless and wasteful. Neither is it, yeah. And the 50,000 of that data write-off relates to a service the client,
yeah.
Hammers. They had an event at the castle with agreed on amount, but they only paid half of the amount. So we had to pursue, we're still pursuing legal action against them on 100,000. So in terms of accounting, we need to also anticipate an amount that will likely be received. So in terms of prudence, you need to be prudent when you prepare your financial record. So we said it's highly likely that we'll write off 50,000. So if you receive 100,000, it's well and good. It's not real money, it's just an accounting issue.
Jeff, I could add, Carmen's thought that they would be able to negotiate a tourism subsidy from Wesgrow and other tourist supporters, whether it's the city or elsewhere. They failed to do that to the amount that they needed, and it's quite clear that they're not able to settle the full amount with us. So a little bit of difficulty there, but we, as the Castle Control Board, feel that there's no point in us trying to push them to do severe action against the city's tourism authorities and other players. That's going to be counterproductive and not helpful to anybody.
Just to follow up on the chair, concerning the particular issue of 50,000, the question is that what are the terms and conditions for hiring or using the castle? Do people have to pay the account before the usage, or do they settle 50% and pay the balance? Can we just have an idea of why the 50,000 then remain if they only settle half?
I think the total amount that is owing by Kamas is 100,000. So in terms of accounting, we need to anticipate the likely amount that we get from the client. So we said, based on our calculations, maybe it's 50,000 that we get from, we'll recover from Kamas. That's just an accounting issue. We do some discounting. So we got up to 50,000, which is fine. When you hire a venue, usually you pay before you pay a deposit. In this event, we had a good business relation, good business relations with the Kamas, to a point that we ended up trusting them, but I think for some, it didn't work out the last time we had an event at the castle. Because it was not the first event at the castle. It was probably the
so there was exception to the rule made because of the relationship. Because if there's a document with TNCs, then of course they have to follow the regulation or the agreement.
It's a document.
There is a document.
This document is why we could take them to court. But they normally do, they pay the damage deposit.
Okay.
So
yeah.
If the total amount was about 200,000. So they paid us 75,000, right?
100.
No, 100. They paid us 100.
In total.
And we anticipated the other 100 then to come. And they just walked away and said, no, 100 is enough for you. So that's why we had to take this legal action against them. No, let me just not make a comment about other avenues.
Yeah, and I think another thing, the issue of the going concern, since we engage...
I want you to round up quickly.
Yeah, that's the last one.
Yeah, because the time is going to be up now.
Just the going concern, it's an issue that was not identified by the AG. It was identified through engagement internally at the castle, through the internal audit, the audit committee and the board. So that's why we disclosed it, and hence the AG did not qualify us on that. Because they do not disclose that, they will have qualified us. So we disclose to them, we've assessed our financial records. These are the issues we have. These are our concerns. We have a serious uncertainty regarding our going concern. And these are the steps we have taken to mitigate the going concern issue. So that's why they do not qualify us. We properly disclose that.
Okay. Chair, if I might just tell this with drawing a common thread, Gift Shop, Castle Military Museum Foundation, Kaziko, and so on. There's one thread that comes through all of this, and the actions being taken by the board and by management. That is, value, money is not paid out unless value is given and proper supply chain management processes are followed. The clean audit is not negotiable. Secondly, the Castle Control Board needs to recover all monies that flow through the Citadel or into the Citadel. Those must be brought to account. As much as possible, those must be retained within the Citadel. Where they need to be paid out, again, that must be against written contracts that have been properly negotiated and at arm's length following a due process. But we are absolutely determined we need to let the Castle earn its keep. Anything that the Castle triggers mustn't be dissipated into a broader community, but one acts humanely and compassionately. Azeco is our partner, and they also have salaries to pay and other public sector, public entity challenges. But we are working towards saying there's no slush funding, there's no money that flows through, even forgotten in a SANDF budget that you can't trace. It must all be flushed out and brought to account. And where donors like the National Lottery and other philanthropists around the city have made monies available to the Castle for this or that purpose, those donations must be recognized, they must be acknowledged, that there must be transparency and full governance. And that is the very, very concerted effort being followed by the board taken through. And we are pleased to make progress. It's not without its challenges, but we are getting there. And then the Castle Control Board must deliver on a strategy that has been declared and reported to this portfolio committee as well as to the executive authority. And it is from you and from our statute that we take our mandate, not from any other person or any other citizen who may have other views as to how the castle should or shouldn't be handled, or where the statues of our kings should be positioned, etc., etc. We take it from our statute and from our controlling authorities. Thank you, Chair.
Are you done?
Can I ask what I wanted to ask?
Yeah,
so. I mean, you've raised it, a serious concern about a going concern. So Amanda said where it's coming from. That's why the auditors were not, just hammering on it. But we've made the submission to the executive authority. They are considering it. It's all that you need in your... Is it powerful that you have that you support it for us? That's all that we need. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. We'll let me do that. Now there is Finger Lunch prepared for yourself.
We can smile.
That's fine. And
saving on the castle.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.